the meeting to order, and then the assembly should immediately elect a chair pro temp to preside during this session. So Vicki, if you would call the meeting to order, then we can turn it over to the board to select a chair pro temp.
I hereby call this regularly scheduled fire board meeting to order. The date is Wednesday, August 19th at 3 p.m.
I move for Curtis Johnson to be chair pro temp.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. So our chair pro temp for this meeting will be Commissioner Curtis Johnson. We have one second preliminary matter now that we have a chair pro temp. We have Commissioner Leonard has requested to appear and vote at today's regularly scheduled board meeting telephonically due to a conflict. I want to advise you of the procedural requirements under Florida's government and the Sunshine Law regarding electronic participation by an absent member. Under Florida government and the Sunshine Law and longstanding Attorney General opinions, electronic participation by an absent member is generally permitted if the following conditions are met. A physical quorum must be present, which we have, and members appearing telephonically do not count toward establishing the physical quorum. The extraordinary circumstances that the AG opinion has consistently advised for telephonic participation should be reserved to extraordinary circumstances. However, the AG opinion goes on to say that whenever the absence of a member due to a scheduling conflict constitutes such circumstances, it is a determination that must be made in the good faith judgment of the board. So with that information, Commissioner Leonard is on telephonically if he wants to say anything in support of his request, or the board can vote.
Like the motion to allow him to participate and vote.
Second.
Do we need to call? Okay, let's affirm that. So we have a motion on the floor that's been moving probably second. I don't think we confirmed that I would be the chair pro tem, but let's take this last one in order. So our motion on the floor to allow participation for Commissioner Travis Leonard. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. We'll ratify the other motion to first, proper second, that I would be the chair pro tem just for this meeting today. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passed. Please call the roll. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Hudson?
Present.
Commissioner Martin? Commissioner Leonard?
Present.
Commissioner Clasby?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Johnson?
Present. All right, please join me in the invocation with Chief Wilson. If you please stand and remove your hats.
Good afternoon, board. If we could all bow our heads. Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here today. We ask for your wisdom and your guidance as we make decisions that affect our fire district, our firefighters, our employees, and the community we serve. Help us lead with integrity, fairness, and good judgment. Give us patience to listen to one another, wisdom in our decisions, and unity in our purpose. Please continue to watch over and protect all of our personnel as they serve the community each day. And all these things we ask, in Jesus' name we pray.
Amen.
Amen.
Please join me now in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Well, we have a packed house today. We have a few seats available here. I just ask your patience today. All will be heard, but we cannot block the doors. Okay. We don't need to be shut down by the fire marshal at a fire meeting. Okay. So if you can make your way to the few extra seats here and just be cognizant of not blocking the doorway there, we hope we don't get a call from the fire marshal. So let's proceed on. We have proclamations and special presentations. Chief, we have Chief Stefani. Stefani, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, board members. Today, we're going to speak about a couple citizens in our county that went above and beyond what it's called for them. It's always great to see when citizens help other citizens, especially in our own county. It shows their care and compassion for others when they don't actually have a call to do that like we do. So we're going to bring up a couple of folks from recent calls, and we'll talk about them a little bit and award them their awards. So our first citizen award is Jake Boyd. If he's in the audience, if he come up. So I was actually driving down Selvitz to go to the college and witnessed Jake running down the street. And there was a marked SO car with no lights on parked on the side of the street. Thought it was kind of strange. So I turned around, and right at the same time, a call was dropped for a rollover. The car was in the ditch right in front of his work, Diamond R, right? It was in the ditch that was so deep you couldn't see the car. So he saw it happen. He ran out to help the individual in the vehicle. When I got back, he helped me assist in getting that person accessed, at least until we could get her out of the ditch. So he was already in the ditch of mud on his own before anybody else got there. The sheriff's car was actually a mechanic test driving the car, so he couldn't turn the lights on. So that was where the strangeness was. I thought it was kind of odd. But she was rescued out of the car. Our special operations team ended up using a Stokes basket to get her out of the deep ditch. Minor injuries, everything worked out. But because of his actions, he didn't have to do that. He saw it. He ran out there, jumped in the muddy ditch, assisted with me to get the door open, hold it open. So we can appreciate that. And thank you for going above and beyond.
Thank you.
Good Samaritan Award presented to Jake Boyd. In recognition of your selfless and humanitarian assistance on July 20th, 2026, your actions reflect the highest standards of kindness, courage, and dedication to helping others in the worst, most vulnerable moments. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it, buddy. Next, I'm going to have Chief French come up here and speak about a call that she was on.
Good afternoon. On June 20th, 2026, Engine 14, Rescue 14, Division 1, and F202, myself responded to an MVC trauma flight criteria in St. Lucie West off Commerce Center Drive. First arriving units reported the vehicle sustained heavy damage. It was a single vehicle accident involving high voltage power lines. And it was on fire. Prior to fire and EMS arrival, our citizen hero, Mr. Michael DeLima, with complete disregard for his own safety, entered an extremely dangerous scene to render aid. He rescued an unconscious occupant and brought her to a safe position. Although the victim ultimately succumbed to her injuries, Mr. DeLima's actions were nothing short of heroic. His efforts provided the victim a chance for survival and perhaps the ability for family to say goodbye. His efforts provided the victim, when asked what made him act, he responded, "I didn't have a choice." But I believe that Mr. DeLima did have a choice that night. And he chose to show courage, compassion, and a willingness to put a stranger's life before his own. And for that reason, we are awarding Michael DeLima the Citizen Hero Award in recognition of your heroic actions at the scene of a motor vehicle collision where you placed yourself at personal risk to render aid to an unconscious occupant. Thank you very much.
Thank you both, two remarkable people for a remarkable job as citizens of our community. And so thank you so much for that and recognition. I think they may want to capture your picture outside. So that is it for the Hero Award and Good Samaritan Award, Chief. Okay. All right. We're going to move on in the agenda. We have a special presentation now. We're going to have our actual fiscal year end 2025 financial statements brought by our CPA, Mr. Jim Hartley. If you come and make a presentation to the board, sir. Hopefully good news, right? All right. No findings. Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here, Jim Hartley with the Bartlemaio McBee, yes, Hartley & Barnes, here presenting the audited financial statements for 25. We did issue an unmodified report, which is a clean opinion. I'll just touch on some of the highlights. You can see what's included in the financial statements. You've got your management discussion and analysis, which is an overview of the year. You have your statement in that position. That's on page 14 of the report, and that includes capital assets and long-term debt. You did have a deficit position at the end of the year of $7 million, but that's quite an improvement over last year. A couple other items in there, statement of revenues and expenditures, and changes in fund balance, budget to actual for the general fund. That's on page 20. And you had total revenues, $147 million. Total expenditures, $125 million. So excess revenues, $22 million, which was also favorable to budget. Included in the financials are the notes to the financial, which describes your summary of significant accounting policies and your required supplementary information. Lastly is the management letter. That's on page 56. We did have a comment in regards to the bank reconciliations, which that's been out there for a few years, but happy to report with the new accounting system that has been corrected subsequent year end. So we will not see that comment next year. And the other thing I'll note is this was submitted to the state timely and within their deadline. And that's my report. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Board, any questions?
Nope.
Well, seeing none, I want to thank staff also for working with the outside accountant. It sounds like everything is in line. This is for information purposes only. I don't think we need to take any action at this point. I'm sure we'll be diving into this further as we look to clearly get a good understanding of where we are. So thank you, sir.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moving on with the agenda. We don't have any accommodations at this point. We're at the point of approval of our fire board meeting minutes from regular meeting July 15th, 2026.
Move approval.
Second.
Moving proper second to approve the minutes. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Oh, thank you. Motion passes. Any addition, deletions to our agenda? Here. Seeing none, I move accept the motion to accept the agenda.
Move approval.
Second.
Move and proper second to set the agenda. And all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion aye. Passes. All right, we have a consent agenda. Anybody want to pull anything? Questions on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'll take a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Move and proper second to accept the consent agenda. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion aye. Passes. Okay. So we're going to move on to public comments. I just want to share a few things here. All are welcome. So before we proceed to the public comment portion of today's meeting, I'd like to read the following statement regarding our procedures for public participation. Like I said, all are welcome. The board values the input of our community members, many of you here today, residents, firefighters, retirees, and all stakeholders. Public comment is an important opportunity for you to share your perspectives on matters within the jurisdiction of this fire district. To ensure an orderly, respectful, and efficient meeting for everyone, comments must be directed to the board as a whole and must relate to the business or operations of our district. Personal attacks, threats, profanity, disruptive behavior just won't be tolerated. Let's be adults. State your comments without all of that. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes. The time limit will be strictly enforced. Secretary will have an indicator here to let you know we have a countdown clock on the wall. Speakers must remain at designated podium, which will be here. And so you will be asked that you state their name and, if relevant, the affiliation with the district for the record, please. The board will listen. We'll not engage in dialogue, debate, or respond to comments during this period. This is not a question and answer session. We're here to listen. The fire board is not an appellant body. Any members requiring board actions or follow-up will be considered through the appropriate processes. If you have written materials or supporting documents, please provide copies to the board clerk over here for inclusion into the record. We ask that everyone remain civil, respectful toward one another. We are all residents of St. Lucie County. Violation of these guidelines may result in me limiting your speaking time. I do not want to do that, so let's just be cordial. Once the public comment period is closed, discussion will be limited to the board. With that, we will now open for public comment. So, if you wish to address us, please come to the podium. If we need to start a line down the middle, we were here to listen. Public comment is open.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Nicholas Ray Burgos, and I'm running for St. Lucie County Commissioner District 4. I come to you today as a prior military veteran, past EMT firefighter, and a public servant. I own two different businesses in the county. I want to begin by saying that I respect every position up here. Leadership is difficult. Leadership requires making decisions that not everyone will agree with. But leadership also requires knowing when a decision deserves another look. I understood the fire service because I lived it. When I left the military, I was searching for that same sense of purpose, brotherhood. I found it in the fire service. These guys pushed me, they corrected me, they challenged me. Sometimes they gave me a hard time. But they made me a better man. I was overeager, I made mistakes, probably drove some of them nuts. And there's probably a time I ran into a fire without the hose, but they loved on me and they taught me what it was to be a firefighter. This is what the fire service is supposed to be represent: brotherhood, sisterhood, and accountability, and having each other's back. Firefighters are asked to walk into situations that most people spend their lives running away from. Signing up for the job doesn't make the danger easier, and it doesn't make the sacrifice of these families any smaller. That is why I'm asking you to reconsider what happened here. If these firefighters exercise poor judgment, then hold them accountable. Reprimand, suspend, change stations, assignments, but taking away someone's livelihood, it's a whole different story. This should be reserved for conduct that truly warrants that consequence. This isn't about whether you personally like these individuals. Opinions don't matter. It's about whether the punishment fits the conduct. As a Christian, I believe deeply in accountability, and I also believe in grace, restoration, and resolving the difference whenever it's possible, in-house. I'm asking you to reconsider their termination, reinstate these firefighters, restore their pay, and address whatever discipline is appropriate, and allow these men and women to continue serving the community they have served. That doesn't make leadership weak. It's a misconception that when we make a decision as leaders and we have to backtrack, that it's weak. It's not. As a former firefighter, as a veteran, as a public servant, as a Christian, and as a resident of St. Lucie County, I will continue standing up for what I believe is right, even when doing so is unaccountable. I'm asking you respectfully, bring these firefighters home. Let's handle this as a fire service family, make it right, and move forward together. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment, who's next? Anyone next want to make comment, public comment? You're welcome. Chief, could you make sure the microphone is on there, please? And when you do come to approach, please. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Katie Seyfried. I'm here today to shine a light on what happens within this district when dedicated employees have the courage to blow the whistle on corrupt leadership. The truth is, this fire board does not protect them. You expose them. And by doing so, you betray every man and woman in this district. On January 20th, firefighters Hutchinson and Baldwin sent a protected whistleblower disclosure to every member of this board. They warned you of retaliation from Chief Lee, Chief Gonzalez, and Attorney Sable. They requested your protection. Instead, at 2:37 p.m. that same day, Councilwoman Stephanie Morgan forwarded that disclosure directly to Chief Lee and Attorney Sable. 3 days later, the clerk treasurer did the exact same thing. On February 4th, your fire board chair, Shannon Martin, followed suit. And exactly 5 days later, Chief Lee threatened to terminate both employees specifically for contacting this fire board. You took a legally protected disclosure and passed it around like a casual office memo. Because of this betrayal, Chief Lee was able to command that the correspondence be treated as a standard public record. You allowed the accused to single-handedly strip away their whistleblower protections. This board took the name of brave employees and delivered them directly to their retaliators. You have used your official time during these public meetings to compliment each other's nail polish, to retell the same tired white cloud story, and to even falsely accuse firemen of killing raccoons while on shift. But when it comes time to actually protect these firefighters, you leave them completely defenseless against the leadership they warned you about. You are the legal governing body. Instead of correcting this retaliation, you actively participated in it. That liability now sits squarely on this dais. This administration is orchestrating a taxpayer-funded cover-up, and the majority of this board are their willing accomplices. You surrendered your authority to the very corruption you are supposed to oversee. We know exactly who on this board has the courage to stand up for our firefighters, and we thank you for it. But to those of you who stood by and let this happen, you can never again look at the firefighters of this department and claim ignorance. They now know that this board does not have their backs. The evidence of your betrayal is public record, and you will be held accountable.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please, we ask that you limit the applause. You are all welcomed here. Please, sir.
Hi, I'm not much of a speaker, they tell me, so I'm just gonna...
Just state your name for the record. Oh,
yeah. Don't need my name.
I beg your pardon?
How's Mikey Martin?
Who's next? Public comment? It's open.
My name is Scott, and I'm here today because the public expects this board to uphold the law and protect the integrity of this district. Right now, that is not happening. A culture of paranoia, secrecy, and retaliation is thriving under your watch. Under Chapter 191 Florida law, you are the governing body required to actively govern this district, not just occupy a seat. You employ the fire chief and attorney at your will. When administration violates the law, your corruption is your responsibility. Recently, I submitted a public records request for formal complaints made against this administration. When I arrived, your clerk went upstairs to consult with administration. When she returned, she illegally demanded my photo ID, claiming that the records were sensitive. This wasn't a mistake. It was a targeted effort to track anyone investigating your leadership. The documents I finally received were intentionally incomplete, missing entire complaints, with zero legal exemptions cited. To document this violation, I requested lobby surveillance footage. District IT said the video had no sound, explicitly stating, none of the recordings have audio. It's illegal to record audio. But look at the glaring hypocrisy. Audio is suddenly illegal when it protects your administration. Yet on March 26th, the fire chief gladly weaponized coerced cell phone audio to investigate and eventually terminate the very employees who had submitted formal complaints against him, the assistant chief and the attorney. He even had the absolute audacity to list himself and the complainant and in charge of the investigation. Conveniently, the next day, the chief issued a new policy banning personnel from recording anything unless they authorized it. This isn't management. It's a cover-up. Can this board explain why audio is illegal when it protects your staff, but is perfectly acceptable when used to destroy whistleblowers? Can you answer that without relying on fabricated explanations of the individuals who orchestrated this? You have no direct control over the chief. You have direct control over the chief and the attorney. Since January, you have received emails, documents, and proof of everything that I have mentioned. You cannot use rehearsed words to tell the public you did not know. The public record proves you did. Instead of stopping it, you rewarded this behavior by extending the fire chief's contract while an active retaliation and hostile work environment complaints were pending against him. Aside from the events of a single commissioner, what has the rest of this board done to correct this conduct? The liability for this toxic culture, the wasted public funds, and the ruined careers falls entirely on this board. It's time to start doing the job you were appointed to do, or resign so someone else can.
All right, who's next?
My name is Lisa Keen.
Lisa, okay.
And I'm just trying to figure out what we're still doing here. A few weeks ago, you, Chief Lee, sat in my living room. I made you a cup of coffee. We had a nice long visit. And when I first shook your hand, I really liked you. And I had a really good feeling. When you left, I told Kevin, this guy, his heart's in the right place, Kevin. I really think down deep he's a good guy. Kevin says, I'm not so sure. We'll see. So then afterwards, we are sitting there and my husband's phone's blowing up. You know, the guy that told on him is, knows everything. It was like a circus and all these people texting my husband. It's crazy. When we thought, you know, I thought that it was really going to work out. And then everybody's going, oh, no, she's being sabalized, or he's being sabalized. And, you know, then, you know, she gets a lot of the blame. And I don't know who's to blame, but I can say, as a mother, as a grandmother, just like I'm sure all of you up here probably might have children. We're all not teenagers. Or grandchildren. I don't know how you sleep at night seeing these children and these families for something that you yourself have probably done many, many times going up the ranks as a firefighter. I know this is not the first prank that's ever happened. And I'm sure all of you guys have taken part in pranks. And I just think it's a sad day. And all I can say is, if you did that to my children, I would probably be over here on Rock Road. And you'd probably be sitting up here with your eyes clawed out, because I would not have put up with what you did to my children. And I hope and pray that you're still going to show me that you're that person that I thought you were that day you walked in my front door. Thank you.
My name is Adam Hutchinson. Members of the fire board, you regularly describe yourselves as responsible stewards of public funds. However, the actions and in some cases the inaction of this board have exposed the fire district and its taxpayers to a significant and potentially avoidable financial liability. Florida law does not make this board ceremonial. You are the governing body of this district. You have the direct authority and oversight responsibilities. Yet despite repeated warnings and serious allegations involving senior leadership, this board has continued to approve and support decisions that increase the district's legal and financial exposure. On February 10, 2026, PGCS issued reservation of rights letters concerning ethics complaints involving District Attorney Sable and Assistant Chief Gonzalez. These letters were a serious warning to the district. They raised concerns regarding potential coverage for allegations involving conflicts of interest, misuse of position, complaint handling practices, and retaliation. In plain terms, the district insurance carrier placed the district on notice that the allegations presented significant risk and that insurance coverage for the resulting liability could potentially be disputed or denied. At that point, this board had an obligation to carefully evaluate the situation and take appropriate steps to mitigate the district's exposure. Instead, the administration continued forward with Loudermill disciplinary hearings, public records disputes, scope splitting, the March 26th formal investigation, and ultimately termination decisions. The board had been warned, the risks were known. Yet there is no indication that meaningful action was taken to stop, reassess, or independently review the decisions being made. Then at the March 18th, 2026 fire board meeting, two board members appropriately raised concerns about extending Chief Lee's contract while he was under an active investigation involving allegations of harassment, discrimination, retaliation, and the fostering of a hostile work environment. Despite these concerns, the majority of this board voted 5-2 to approve a 3-year contract extension, including an automatic 3-year renewal for Chief Lee, while he remained the subject of an active whistleblower investigation. That decision is particularly troubling because this board has direct authority over the fire chief and the district attorney. You had knowledge of the allegations. You had knowledge of the potential risk to the district. You had the authority to intervene, demand accountability, and protect the public. Instead, the board chose to extend the contract of the very individuals whose actions and decisions we're generating increased liability for the district. The question the taxpayers deserve to have answered is simple. Who will ultimately pay for the consequences of these decisions? If the district faces settlements, judgments, legal expenses, or uncovered claims, these costs will not simply disappear. They will be borne by the taxpayers of the county. This board should not wait until the financial consequences become unavoidable before exercising the oversight it was elected or appointed to provide. The warnings have already been given. The allegations are already known. The potential exposure is already significant. The board must begin acting as an independent governing body, not simply approving the recommendations of the admin without meaningful scrutiny. The taxpayers deserve accountability. They deserve responsible oversight, and they deserve a governing board that places the protection of the district and the public above the protection of individual administrators. The question is no longer whether this board had notice of the risk.
Okay, sir. Your time is... Okay. Thank you so much. Who's next?
I'm Rick Reed. Okay. I was born and raised here in St. Lucie County, and I detest corruption and retaliation. I detest it. The seven of you are responsible for the oversight of the St. Lucie County Fire District, the chief, the attorney, and the assistant chief. I also note, she's not here, we've got the mayor of Port St. Lucie, the chairman of the county commission, and the mayor of Fort Pierce, and we all know how that's worked out for us. So, many of the fire board commissioners that oversaw the district administration appear not to care about the lack of leadership. There's been harassment, retaliation, sexual harassment, complaints filed, favoritism, and overall extreme low morale. 10 months ago, two firefighters filed 25 complaints, including 1,000 pages of documents against the fire chief, assistant chief, and fire district attorney. The same administration who the complaint was filed against said it was unfounded in 18 hours. Then the administration demoted the firefighter for bringing this to the board's attention, and he was threatened with being fired, and he was. That's retaliation. How did this fire board recently vote 5-2 to renew this fire chief's contract for 3 more years while he, the assistant chief, and the fire district attorney are under investigation? Shannon Martin, the mayor, was quoted a few days ago when her husband was allegedly accused of pulling up signs. Chairman Martin said it's normal protocol to be on administrative leave with pay pending the investigation. What's the difference? Why do you all make rules for others, but not for yourself? I mean, that's just ridiculous. Then we paid, the people of St. Lucie County paid this law firm, Jackson Lewis, to do this, again paid by the taxpayer. On December 3rd, 2025, complaint was improperly reviewed and dismissed by the individuals implicated in the complaint. It was substantiated. How is that proper? And then the chief filed after the fact, during the investigation, conclusive rebuttal of misconduct allegations, final position statement. I guess he had to wait. Did the three men that were charged, did they get to do that? And then he said if the complaints were seeking a good faith legal remedy, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Well, they were afraid of retaliation. And Helen Keller, Stevie Wonder, and Ray Charles would have seen that. You know, this is just ridiculous. And then on top of it, the chief sends out this on his Facebook, the shady, unqualified candidate for mayor, Stephen Giordano, and when he caught it. And I have not approved or disapproved any of them. I don't live in Port St. Lucie, but I live in St. Lucie County, and this crap's got to stop, whether it's at the county, whether it's at Port St. Lucie, or the city of Fort Pierce. Where do y'all get off allowing this to happen?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Who's next?
How you doing, everybody? My name's Stephen Giordano, and I'm running for mayor of Port St. Lucie. I want it to be known that I stand with our first responders, our firefighters, law enforcement, nuclear security, and everybody that puts in a lot of hours. You know, we go through a lot of schooling, and it's really a shame to see firefighters lose their jobs over nonsense. Our firefighters, first responders, put their lives on the line every single day for our community. They deserve leadership that respects them, listens to them, and has their backs. Leadership should never be about personal feelings, grudges, intimidation, or retaliation. If someone speaks up, disagrees, files a complaint, retaliating because you're upset is cowardly. Strong leaders handle disagreements professionally, follow due process, and make decisions based on facts. In my opinion, Chief Lee has lost the confidence needed to effectively lead and turned his back on the members of his own firefighter service family. I believe it is time for him to resign so new leadership can rebuild trust and morale here at San Lucie County. Enough division, enough retaliation. Our firefighters deserve better. Our firefighters are very hardworking individuals, and they risk their lives every single day. It's ridiculous that they have to deal with this. I feel really bad for them and the people that lost their jobs. I back our first responders, and I'm here for them, and I'm here for everyone in our community that serves. Thank you guys for all you do. I appreciate you sincerely. Thank you.
Anyone else?
My name is Jordan Hutchinson. Okay. I'm asking this board to fully uphold Chief Lee's disciplinary standards. He stands by his decisions, and this board has fully supported him. I respect the loyalty of this board and has for him, even when his standards applied to me. I want to remind you that Chief Lee's standards and how he enforced them. Out of respect for the certain division chief, I'm not going to use his name. He's been through enough. This division chief participated in an investigation, then later wrote a character reference letter for the same employee. Due to this, he was later placed under investigation, for which was conducted by Chief Lee. On February 17, 2022, Chief Lee found a clear conflict of interest for this act. Here are Chief Lee's own words for the chief officer who fails to remove himself from a conflict of interest. He states that proceeding without approval demonstrated incompetence. He said the chief used his position to obtain special preference for employees, causing a waste of time and money. And finally, he concluded that these actions confirm he is unsuitable for employment within the district in his current position. That's the standard. The chief officer cannot participate in a matter and then influence it. If he does, then his rank is ruthlessly stripped from him and alters his career forever. Now apply these standards to the actions of Chief Lee, Chief Gonzalez, and Kim Sable. Jackson Lewis substantiated that our December 3rd complaint was dismissed by the individuals who themselves were the subjects of the allegations.
Mr. Hutchinson, sorry to interrupt. Your Jackson Lewis request is a separate agenda item. You can use your 3 minutes to talk about it as well, but I just want to make sure you'll have a separate opportunity to address the agenda item that you requested to be placed on.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Jackson Lewis substantiated that our December 3rd complaint was dismissed by individuals who were themselves the subject of the allegations. This created an inherent conflict of interest and undermined the objectivity of the decision-making process. Jackson Lewis substantiated a similar behavior in September. It also occurred during our investigation that led to our termination. We'll deal with those documents in arbitration. Right now, my focus is only on today. Our responsibility and your responsibility in this room right now. Commissioners, I believe you have two choices. You can show your full support for this fire chief by enforcing his own standards against him, Chief Gonzalez, and Kim Sable. Or you can do nothing. You let your silence show that you do not support his standards, and you can use your positions to secure an exemption for all three of them. Thank you.
Who's next?
I'd like to have a point of order real quick. If we could just make sure that the attorney is recognized by the chair before she butts in.
Point of order is recognized. Go ahead, sir.
Commissioners, my name is Christopher Baldwin. I want to explain why I'm still here. Because after everything that has happened, some people probably wonder why not just let it go. The answer became even clearer to me during our settlement meeting with Chief Lee. After nearly a year of complaints, investigations, discipline, and ultimately our terminations, we sat together trying to find a way to end this. And during that meeting, I heard things I'll never forget. Chief Lee told us that he closed our original complaint as quickly as he did, just to piss us off. He described Doug Boudreaux as a casualty of war because of Hutchinson and me. Thinking about those words, a complaint process involving firefighters raising concerns about their own administration just to piss us off. A firefighter losing his career, a casualty of war. And then came the proposed path forward, reinstatement. but in exchange, we would have to hold the district harmless and bring the complaints and ongoing matters to an end. And that is when this became about something much bigger than me getting my job back. Because what message would I be sending to every firefighter still inside of those stations if I accept my career back in exchange for walking away from everything we had been fighting to protect them from? This entire process started with one principle that I believe everyone in this room shares. We protect firefighters. Not just from burning buildings, we protect them when they report something they believe is wrong, and we make damn sure that the system they are told to trust in is worthy of that trust. Instead, what have these men and women of the district watched? They've watched us file complaints, they've watched us ask for independence, they watched conflicts occur that Jackson Lewis would later substantiate. They watched us continue pushing, they watched us get disciplined, and eventually they watched three firefighters lose their careers. Then after all of that, there was a conversation about giving those careers back, but only if the fight ended with them. Commissioners, imagine being a 20-year-old firefighter watching this. What lesson are we teaching them? To keep their mouth shut? Imagine being a 20-year-old veteran with a mortgage, children, and a retirement approaching. What does he tell that young firefighter when he comes to him and says, something isn't right, what should I do? Does he tell him to report it, or does he look at what happened to us and say, you have a family, leave it alone? This is the damage that should concern the board the most, because once firefighters become afraid of the process designed to protect them, you have damaged something that cannot be repaired with a policy revision. Trust was damaged. I could have stopped, Hutchinson could have stopped, and when the possibility of getting our careers back was put on the table, we could have taken the easy road. But someday, this will not be me, Hutchinson, and Boudreaux, it'll be another firefighter. And when that day comes, the precedent I leave it behind matters. I want the firefighter to know you can tell the truth, you can challenge someone more powerful than you, you can use the complaint process, and your career will not become the price you pay for refusing to remain silent. We haven't fought this hard because we hate the district, quite the opposite. We fought this hard because we love this organization and love this organization.
Yes, thank you for your time. Thank you, sir. All right. Who's next? Anybody else? All right. I'm seeing no movement. So we're going to close.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Christopher Cassidy. I'm retired with over 28 years of local government knowledge and experience. I understand the importance of policies, accountability, progressive discipline, due process, and responsibility the government has when making decisions that affect employees' livelihood. Florida firefighters are specially afforded protection under the Florida Fighters Bill of Rights, Florida Statutes 112.81 and 82. Those petitions exist for a reason. To ensure investigations and disciplinary proceedings are conducted fairly and with due process. I want to address the termination of the St. Lucie County firefighters, the three of them that were terminated over the alleged hazing involving a modified bug zapper. These incidents occurred in 2024, nearly 2 years before they were reported to the administration, yet three firefighters ultimately lost their careers. No one's saying workplace policies shouldn't be ignored. Everyone makes mistakes, including firefighters, supervisors, administrations, and even the fire chief. The question is whether the punishment is fair and proportionate to the action. Sometimes accountability is necessary, but there is also time when grace should be invoked. Fort Pierce police interviewed the firefighters identified as victims. According to a police report, they said they were not victims and their participation was voluntary. Police found no criminal matter, even though the district outside investigation acknowledged that those employees said they consented. So who was the complainant? When something surfaces 2 years later and the alleged victims themselves deny being victims, extraordinary care should be taken before destroying careers. There's also serious concern regarding the conflicts of interest of the district complaint process. People who are subject of the employee complaints should not be involved in reviewing and determining the outcome of those complaints. Even the appearance of bias undermines the confidence in the process. The district also hired a law firm to conduct what was presented as an independent investigation. The union says the same firm was later retained to represent the district in arbitration defense discipline resulting from that investigation. The board should seriously consider whether that process can truly be viewed as independent. If policies were violated, hold people accountable, but accountability must be consistent, proportional, and applied equally, including the management. These firefighters are more than in numbers. They have spouses, children, mortgages, careers, and families that depend on them. Don't destroy people's careers and families just because it's easier to stand by or remain silent. Everyone makes mistakes. Good organizations recognize the difference between conduct requiring correction and conduct requiring someone to lose their career. Good leadership requires making sound decisions, especially when those decisions are difficult. This board has the authority and responsibility to examine the entire situation and do what is right. Don't remain silent because it's an easy decision. I ask one of you to make a motion to return these firefighters back to their careers. Have the courage to make the right one. Thank you very much.
Who's next? Who's next?
Hi, this is my first time ever doing anything like this. My name is Dawn, and I just want to start off by saying I never knew you, never met you, didn't know anything about you, but since all of this has started, it doesn't seem like there's one person that I've actually met, Chief Lee, that has one good thing to say about you. And I'm a pretty positive person, and I like give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
Point of order, ma'am.
Ma'am, please direct your comments to the board.
To the board.
To the board, please.
Okay. So, I've heard nothing but terrible things about Chief Lee since this whole investigation has started. And it's pretty sad because we live in St. Lucie County and our children go to school here. And I think you've made a mockery out of these three men. I believe that that's what this was all about. You, Chief Lee, got caught doing something. Who knows what it was? I still don't know. But whatever your complaint was about you, it seems like you've retaliated against these guys any way you found possible to do. But you didn't think about... I'll talk to all of you.
Thank you.
Apparently, he didn't think about what this was going to do to grandkids that had to go to school when their parents were fired. Because if that's what teachers and neighbors have to hear about, they're looking at it like they were fired because they did something so awful wrong. When you say it was a bug zapper, that's pretty ridiculous and an embarrassment to all of St. Lucie County for what has happened. It's like constantly been drugged through the mud, not to mention what you've mentally done to these guys that have children, families, schools they have to send their kids to. Every one of these guys is good guys, not just a good guy. Every one of the people that works with them has had nothing but positive things to say about them, how they've trained them, how they would go and want to be their partner every single day. So I think you're just... the longer you keep this going, the more you're dragging your name through the mud, and it's going to be hard for you to save face. And anyone that's up here doing it with him is not looking good on y'all either. That's all.
Thank you. Who's next? Okay, I'm not seeing any more movement. We're going to close public comments. Thank you all for sharing public comments today. We have a further agenda item here that has been put on our agenda. I'm sure some of that will come up at that particular point in time. We have next on our agenda comments from the union representative. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The people standing behind me, this is part of my executive board. Also want to introduce Bruce Anderson coming down from representing Tallahassee, the Board of Professional Firefighters, who blessed us with his presence. I want to read a few things and just basically go through kind of where we're at right now. Members of the board, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you today. I want to begin by acknowledging what we have heard from members of this fire district. The number of people willing to come forward and speak about their concerns should tell this board something important. There's a problem here, and it goes far beyond the disciplinary action of or one personal matter. As the elected president of Professional Firefighters and Paramedics at Local 1377, my responsibility is to represent and protect the men and women I serve. I take that responsibility seriously. Just as I know each and one of you take this responsibility that you have been bestowed as elected officials. I currently represent 5 employees who were disciplined without just cause. I have made every effort to negotiate a reasonable settlement that would allow these employees to return to work. Unfortunately, the fire district three proposals have essentially been the same offer every single time. The district may say these employees have been offered their job back. That is not the whole story. Their return is being conditioned on surrendering rights and signing a broad, hold harmless agreement concerning issues that the district says were unrelated to their termination. So I have one simple question. If these issues had nothing to do with their termination, why is it so important that these employees give up their rights concerning those issues as a condition of returning to work? That question deserves an answer. I also want to formally address the meeting that was conducted behind the locals' back. Local 1377 is investigating the substance of that meeting, and depending on what that investigation establishes, we may pursue an unfair labor practice. This isn't about creating conflict. It's about protecting our members and protecting the integrity of the collective bargaining relationship. But the concerns of our membership go far beyond these five employees wrongfully disciplined. Our members are concerned about how investigations are being conducted, the fear of retaliation for speaking up, the treatment of company officers, and the direction of negotiations, including the use of mental health days as leverage against the local and its members. When you put all these together, one thing is clear. Morale inside the fire district is low. And low morale doesn't stay inside the fire station. It affects trust, communication, retention, teamwork, and ultimately the service we provide the citizens of the county. I also want this board to understand that a motion has been made for discussion and potentially a vote of no confidence in the fire chief, assistant fire chief, and the district attorney at next month's meeting. That is serious. It should not be dismissed as union politics or disagreement over a contract. It reflects a growing loss of confidence among the people who work inside the organization every day. These firefighters and paramedics are not speaking because they don't care about the district. They are speaking because they do. They run towards emergencies while others run away. They work holidays. They miss time with their family. They put their lives and well-being on the line for the citizens of St. Lucie County. They deserve leadership that respects them. They deserve to be able to speak without fear. They deserve a fair disciplinary process and negotiations conducted in good faith. And they deserve to know that the organization they serve will stand behind them. I'm not asking this board to blindly take the union side. I'm asking you to listen. Investigate, ask difficult questions, demand transparency, and hold everyone accountable, those responsible for administering the fire district. Because accountability cannot only apply to the firefighter at the bottom of the organizational chart, it has to apply to everyone. You were elected to protect the citizens of St. Lucie County. I was elected to protect the men and women who protect those citizens. Those responsibilities shouldn't put us against each other. They should give us a reason to work together. So I ask this board, don't dismiss these concerns. Don't minimize them. Don't mistake silence for satisfaction. The men and women of this fire district deserve better. The citizens of St. Lucie County deserve better. And as president of Local 1377, I'll continue to do everything within my authority and responsibility to make sure they get it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda, we have no public hearings today. We'll move through no unfinished business. So on to new business. Item one, board, we are taking up the discussion on rescheduling the September 16th meeting and the meeting time. Attorney Sable, could you elaborate on this, please?
Yes, thank you. As you know, our regularly scheduled meetings usually take place at 3 o'clock on the third Wednesday of every month. However, on September 16th, we have a final budget hearing at 5:01. So historically, what the board has done is move the regularly scheduled 3 o'clock to the 4 o'clock slot so that you can proceed from that into the 5:01 tentative budget hearing.
All right. So board, what's your pleasure with that? I'll take a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and probably second that we reschedule our September 16th meeting from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Everybody understand the motion?
Okay. Just one comment.
Yes, sir.
I want to make sure that's the final hearing.
Final, yes.
Yes.
Final hearing.
I saw
final hearing. Okay. All in favor of that, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. Attorney Sable, professional services agreement, medical director, Mr. Dr. Kenneth Palestrant.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Enclosed for your review is a copy of a proposed agreement between the fire district and Dr. Kenneth Palestrant, MD, to continue to provide services as medical director for the fire district. Dr. Palestrant's contract is for a 3-year term with an annual compensation of $92,400 and and is exempt from the RFP process pursuant to the district purchasing manual. The agreement also provides for an annual COLA commensurate with the negotiated and awarded to the bargaining unit members during the term of the agreement beginning in year two. District staff recommends approval of the agreement.
All right. Board?
Make a motion to approve the agreement.
Second.
Moved and properly second to approve this professional agreement. Any questions on the motion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. All right. Chief Walker, we're discussing RFP 26-0601, lawn and landscape maintenance contract.
Division Chief Walker, board, thank you for allowing me to present this. The fire district issued a request for proposals, RFP 26-601 for lawn and landscape maintenance contract. 18 proposers were evaluated in rank. Turf Design and Associates received the highest combined score of 270 points and was ranked first. A complete final evaluation scores and ranking are included in Attachment A. Contract terms, the initial contract terms will run from October 1st, 2026 through September 30th, 2029, with up to a two-year additional one-year renewal terms upon mutual agreement with the district. Compensation will be based on the selected proposer's submitted annual pricing. Staff recommends that the Fire Board approve the award of RFP 26-601 to Turf Design and Associates and authorize staff to finalize and execute the contract consistent with the RFP submitted pricing and terms summarized above. If a satisfactory agreement cannot be finalized, or if the select firm is unable or unwilling to enter into perform the contract, staff will further request authorization to proceed in ranking order with the next highest ranked proposer until a satisfactory agreement is reached without returning to the board solely to advance the next ranked proposer.
Okay, board, we've heard from Chief Walker here. Any discussion? I'll take a motion.
Motion to approve. Second.
Okay, moved and properly second to approve RFP 26-0601. Any questions on the motion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. All right, Chief Walker, you're up again.
Yes, I am. Okay, so the second one is the Fire District issued an invitation to bid ITB 26-0602 for janitorial services. 11 bids were received and publicly opened on July 27th, 2026. Staff reviewed the submissions and references for responsiveness and responsibility in accordance with the solicitation. Battalion Enterprises Incorporated, doing business as Property Works, submitted the lowest responsive and responsible bid with a first-year pricing of $36,492. The complete bid tabulation and ranking are included as Attachment A. Contract terms, the initial contract is from October 1st, 2026 through September 30th, 2029, with up to two additional one-year renewals by mutual agreement and district approval. Staff recommends that the Fire Board approve the award to ITB 26-0602 to Battalion Enterprises Incorporated, doing business as Property Works, as the lowest responsive and responsible bidder, and authorize staff to finalize and execute the contract consistent with the ITB. Submitted pricing terms summarized above. If a satisfactory agreement cannot be finalized, or the selected vendor is unable or unwilling to enter into perform the contract, staff further request authorization to proceed in bid ranking order with the next lowest responsive and responsible bidder until a satisfactory agreement is reached without returning to the board solely to advance to the next ranked bidder.
Okay, board, you've heard this concerning contract 26-062. Any questions? I entertain a motion.
Move for approval.
Second.
Move to proper second to approve ITB 26-062. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, board.
All right, Mr. Bargeron, you're up. Fiscal year 2026-27 proposed tentative budget, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This presentation, there's no action on the presentation. This just brings together a lot of the different pieces of information that we've been developing since the spring. We've had interaction with every fire station chief, every department head, had multiple meetings, and this is just a summary of a lot of the at a very high level, a lot of the rolling up and the summarization of all that detail. A similar presentation will be used at the tentative hearing on September 9th and then the final hearing on September 16th. Nothing is decided officially until the final hearing on the 16th when the final budget, it's called final budget, but it's really the starting point for next year's budget, and the tax rate or millage rate is set for next year. Oops. So here we just wanted to share some taxable value revenue trends. So going back to 2022, we saw a year-to-year increase of 17.3%. Next year it was 17.4%, then it dropped to 12.7%, 10.9%, and now we're down to 7.6%. So that's an important trend since we are at a capped millage of 3.0 mils, and with the taxable value decreasing, the increase is decreasing, that's actually going to result in a decrease in the increase, the change of the revenue available in each year. Impact fees, we're seeing something similar. Our impact fee collections are declining. The 2026 number is as of August 14th, so we haven't closed out the year. Anything we collect between now and September 30th will add to that. It's a surprising trend, though, given all of the building that we hear about in Southwest County. And our last fire station, depending on the size of the fire station, they're, $10, $12 million. And so impact fee collections of $3 million a year, it's going to take us 3.5, 4 years to collect enough in impact fees to build one fire station. Those are our two biggest revenue sources, for construction projects, and we have the five-year construction plan in a later slide. But impact fees and those tax collections really drive the construction program. And with impact fees dropping, that allows provides less revenue to offset those costs. So the overall proposed budget is $236.6 million, all in the general fund, a little tiny bit in impact fees and debt service. We really don't have any grants to speak of. So that's, we really have three primary fund groups. And that just compares the budget last year in the preliminary with this year in the preliminary. And this presentation is something that's been used in the past. I'm keeping the format consistent. This is interesting though, because the reserve balances, I looked at last year's slide, and we had 12 different funds with reserve balances last year. And I've spoken over the past couple of budget years that my goal is to consolidate more, make it and simplify it. And so going into 26-27, we're going to have a general fund, debt service fund, and a impact fee fund. If we do get grant awards in 26-27, I'm going to talk to, I think Jim left, I'm going to talk to the auditor and see if he considers that restrictive enough to establish its own fund. I'd prefer to keep it in the general fund. So this is really going to help us eliminate those interfund transfers, which skew both the revenue and the expenditure budget, which, by the way, I'll be bringing another budget amendment with some additional transfers that I had to, that's the tool to utilize to close these out into the general fund. You might not think it's exciting, but I do. but the general fund, ending fund balance estimated at the end of this fiscal year, 9/30/2026, which assumes budgeted revenues and expenditures actually materialize. We spend everything that we budgeted, and we collect everything that we collect all the revenues that we budgeted. Rarely does that occur. We want it to, we want to come in under budget on appropriations and over budget on revenues. But until we close out the year, and we don't close out the year end for, 6 weeks to allow invoices that come in at the end of September to be paid, accrued back into the prior year. But what this shows is that the ending fund balance in the general fund is $68.2 million. We have a policy that says we want to have a set-aside target of 20% of appropriation budget. But then we came back and we modified that policy to remove the non-recurring transfers. As I mentioned, they inflate the budget, both the revenue and the expense budget. So that bottom line in the 25-26 estimated expense column, the third column in, you can see it takes the estimated expense of $203.8 million, estimated being budget. And in the bottom section, we're removing the transfers of $27.2 million. So the net is $176.6 million. And so when you apply 20% to that, our target is $35 million, the bottom line instead of the 40.7 million in the upper line. And then we, during the 25-26 year, we took a big chunk of our fund balance and we committed it to future construction projects because we have a $95 million five-year capital plan. And so subtracting those two from the 68.2 or 68.3 million, we're going to have $2.8 million in unassigned fund balance at year end. Now, of course, you know, the 30 million in committed could be modified with board action. But all in all, it looks like it's going to be a good year end close. Major initiatives included in 2026-27 budget. The upper section includes salaries, benefits, operational costs, focusing on our personnel. 30 new firefighters with salaries using an average salary, associated fringe, health insurance premiums. Then we've got a step increase for all employees that are not on the current step. Overtime increases based on current year trends. Required pension trust contribution to the firefighters fund, $3 million, so subtotal of $10 million there. The general employees retirement fund did not have an increase. It had a slight decrease going in, $17,000, if I recall correctly. And then the next section is, we talk about these as being more of a non-recurring or non-discretionary type of expense because, you know, we choose to purchase a new vehicle or we choose to renovate a building or we choose to build a new building. But just for 26-27, those projects total $31.8 million. And those are all in the five-year capital plan also, which I think is the next slide. Nope. Just a pie chart that shows the appropriation categories. This is all funds, so we have debt service in there. This also includes the reserve amounts, which skews that salary benefit percentage, but I've got a more realistic presentation of that percentage as a cost as a percentage of recurring expenses, pulling out those construction projects. So here's the capital improvement plan. Sorry, it's hard to read. If anybody wants a copy, I'd be glad to provide a copy. The most important thing, and we've reviewed this, I think, two or three times in the past year, really wanted to focus on what our construction and infrastructure and equipment replacement needs are for the next 5 years, and that's 26-27 through 2030-31. And by the way, if we have projects in 25-26 that aren't completed,
right,
we will be rolling those funds into the next year budget, and usually that's done by budget amendment after that closeout that I mentioned, the six-week invoice payout.
Right. Mr. Bergeron, I think one of the things here that I'd like to see, right, I'd like a copy, but I'd like to categorize it because one of the things that stood out in my mind is that there are actual physical things that we need to construct because of the growth. So if we can categorize it as to, like, capital equipment, one color, if there are construction, actual physical places that we construct, and that's a different color, because I would like to be upfront with the public to understand that what I heard is we need $95 million to build fire stations.
The fleet is very expensive too.
Right.
This slide will be very easy to.
Okay.
Even
on both of those, I think that's something too, that as we have these engagement conversations with the public, that this money has to come from somewhere, right? Because we are going to provide the safety for our citizens in the county. And that's going to become challenging. And we just want everybody to know as they come along to understand the story.
Yes, sir.
It'll help us. It'll help me. I'm sure to help my colleagues. Thank you.
So as discussed at the last board meeting, the recommended millage rate is 3.0 mils. So that's what was in that official form that we have to submit to Department of Revenue. That will be on the recommendation at the tentative public hearing. But then, as I said earlier, the final public hearing on September 16th, that's where the rate is set, which will affect the taxpayers. So, not 12th and 19th, yeah.
6th.
I need to pull my calendar out.
It's the 16th. We just
is approved. It 9th and 16th? Yeah.
I know the 16th was the final one, I think.
Okay.
That's a typo.
Yes, a typo. We need to correct that, please. Final 16th.
Just so you know, the taxpayers are notified of the tentative hearing by their tax bills that went out
today.
This week. I just got one.
Got mine today.
And then there's an advertisement that will run on the Sunday preceding the 16th.
Yeah.
That will notify the public.
Okay.
So miscellaneous. I just wanted to share this. Again, I find this interesting. You might not, but the legacy accounting system that we were using, that's an example in that upper grid. So we had two construction projects that were ongoing, station 519 and station 520. And the accounting system only had two segments, something called a key and an object. And the key was used interchangeably. Bottom line is, if we had an impact fee expense for station 519 and we had an impact fee expense to station 520, they would both come out of that middle line. And you couldn't tell which station it was for without actually going out and looking at purchase orders, doing a lot of legwork. So the new system that we're implementing, we went live on May 7th, has four account segments instead of two. And so now we're going to have the ability to add that the last five digits is the project segment. And so we can track it regardless of the fund source. We can associate every expenditure that is that's related to that project with that one field. It's going to really help with budget management and reporting.
I'm happy that you're excited about this stuff, sir. I think we got the right person there, because I'm about to glaze over here.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work, but it's going to pay dividends.
You're excited.
So another thing in the miscellaneous section is just Florida Amendment 3. I wanted to share this because these numbers are out there, and we have run some revenue projections going out 26, 27, 27, 28. This came from the St. Lucie County property appraiser, and you can see June 5th at the very top, this was when this was prepared. And so what this estimate says that if the 2026, I don't really have a pointer, that you can see there's $46.6 million in that second column, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taxable value. That was the estimate on June 6th. I don't want to screw it up. Oh, there it is. And so the property appraiser's office was estimating that in the first wave, if this passes, the first wave in 27, 28, that taxable value would drop to $39.4 billion or a 15% decrease. And this has been widely publicized, or at least I've seen it quite a few times. And the second box is what happens in the next year, which that taxable value decrease goes down to $34.5 billion, which is a 25.88% increase.
Decrease
in taxable value, which would be a direct decrease in our ad valorem taxes, our property tax collections, because our millage rate, let's assume it stays at 3 mils, which the next slide does. But I wanted to point out that so this slide uses $46.6 million as the taxable value. We got our actual taxable value at the end of June. July 1st is the deadline. That's when it's officially certified. Well, that came in at, $48 billion, so a bigger number. Property appraiser's office did not rerun any of their numbers. So what these two tables do is the upper table, it drops the second year to 39.4. That's the number from the preceding slide. And then the following year, it's 35.4 from the preceding slide. And if we had those taxable values in 27, 28, and 28, 29, our revenue would drop by the second year, the revenue loss compared to 26, 27 would be $38.7 million. That's the loss. That's the reduction. The second table uses those same percentages. So you can see on the very far bottom right, the 25.88% cumulative decrease. So I applied that percentage decrease to the higher value, the starting point of 48 billion, hope I'm not losing you, next to the little red asterisk. And so, our estimated revenue losses using the property appraiser's information, but updating it for the July 1st taxable value. We're based on these numbers, what crystal ball are you going to use? But this says, all right, we're going to be down somewhere between $35-38 million by the end of the second year. So what we took a look at is, okay, well, our current budget, everything is $236,592,251 from preceding slides. And then we categorize them in recurring and non-recurring, and that's why I mentioned the construction projects. So included in that $236 million is the $59.574 projected ending fund balance at the end of next fiscal year, so September 30th, 2027. The debt service budget, capital budget, those are non-recurring. And then recurring, we've got salaries and benefits, utilities, property casualty insurance, all of our other operating expenses, fuel, you know. And we've got incredible detail on this, so that's why I said this is really rolled up. But so if we take that $144 million in recurring expenses, and by the way, salary and benefits in that recurring column is 85.3% of the recurring number, not, you know, that much lower 50% that was on that pie chart. Mm-hmm. So recurring expenses, $144 million. This year revenue is $165 million. We reduce it by the cumulative, so this is going all the way to 28, 29, and this is using the lower of the revenue reduction numbers. Remember, one was 35, one was 38. So this is, you know, best case scenario. That leaves a net revenue of $129 million. Compare that to the recurring expenditures that we're currently using to run the operations of the fire district, and we've got a $14.9 million shortfall that we can fund with reserves only for so long. And you know, that's not even addressing the $95 million capital plan. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that last part did, especially that, and that's the part we want to capture, right? Because I think that's the part. And I think that as we work through this as a board to try to get some public-facing documents to help the public understand the challenges that we're going to be facing with a lot of unknown and uncertainty right now.
And we looked at this, I mean, a day or two after we got the property appraiser's estimates, and, you know, the concern, the focus is, all right, well, what do we do to, you know, maintain operations? And the short-term answer is, well, we can use reserves. But that's like using your savings account, you know, to run your household. You only have so much.
Right.
And I believe that's it. Questions.
Are you trying to get in, Mr. Leonard? Sure. Commissioner Leonard?
No, I'm just commenting on this.
All right.
Ross's comment about using the land reserves.
Yes. I think we all kind of cringed on that, right? So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me then.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
I think that this is an important presentation because the public may have a perception that what they call the badges are safe, that because there was a lot of talk in the legislature that was going to be protected law enforcement and first responders in the tax plan that they came up with, but which did not emerge, so that people need to understand that that is not necessarily protected. And this special taxing district will bear the requirements of this Amendment 3 like cities and counties.
Yeah, yes. which means that, you know, we will not run a deficit of $14 million. We'll have to balance our budget like we always do, and we'll have to make some tough decisions, right? And I don't know what that looks like, but I think that's going to be a great conversation for our community. Any other board member have a comment? Any other board member? No comments? Okay. Yes, sir.
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
I just ask for your indulgence. I have kidney stones. Like a 3 minute. I just need to run through.
Yes. Okay. We'll just slightly adjourn for 3 minutes here.
Recess.
Okay. And then we'll resume. No problem. Right.
How long?
Till she gets back. She said 3 minutes. I'm not going to sit here and hold a clock, man.
Poor thing.
What are we doing, Ms. Vicki? We got good. Okay. All right. We're back in order here. So our next agenda item we're going to cover, Attorney Sable, this is a citizen's request for an agenda item. Could you give us a lead in here and what we're going to do here in the process?
Thank you. Members of the Fire District Board of Commissioners, we have received a citizen request for an agenda item. The St. Lucie County Fire District Bylaws, Policies and Procedures, Section 10, Order of Business, Section B, provides as follows. Any person desiring to have a particular matter placed on an agenda may so request through the clerk, treasurer, or designee. Any request shall include all information and documents concerning the subject matter to be presented to the Fire Board and shall indicate the approximate length of time required for the presentation of the subject matter. Section C provides as follows. Appropriate administrative staff members shall have the opportunity to submit their comments to the Fire Board upon any item requested to be placed upon an agenda. Mr. Jordan Hutchinson and Mr. Christopher Baldwin have requested the following addition to the agenda. Board, Chair, and Commissioners, more than 1 month has passed since the completion of the Jackson Lewis investigation involving concerns related to the handling of employee complaints and the participation of senior district officials in those processes. The investigation was publicly funded and addressed matters involving complaint handling, conflicts of interest, administrative review, and the integrity of district processes. The findings and the broader documentary record present governance questions that extend beyond the individual employment disputes presently proceeding through the contractual grievance and arbitration process. We are not asking the Fire Board to prejudice the pending arbitration, determine the merits of any disciplinary grievance, or interfere with the contractual rights of either the district or the affected employees. We are asking the board to address its separate government governance responsibilities and determine whether the district's policies, complaint routing procedures, conflict safeguards, investigative structure, and oversight processes require independent review or improvement. Beginning in January of 2026, we repeatedly placed the board on notice of concerns regarding these processes. Our purpose has been to protect the integrity of district procedures, strengthen accountability, preserve employee confidence in internal reporting systems, and reduce the likelihood that similar issues will recur. We respectfully request that the board publicly advise, number one, whether it intends to conduct or commission a formal governance and process review. Number two, whether these matters will be placed on a future public meeting agenda. Number three, what steps, if any, will be considered to strengthen complaint handling, conflict review, procedural fairness, and independent oversight? And lastly, number four, if the board does not intend to undertake such a review, whether that represents the board's formal position on this matter. The purpose of this request is not to revisit past decisions, but to determine whether the district's organizational processes, governance structure, and protective defenses can be strengthened to reduce the likelihood of similar events in the future. We respectfully ask the board to consider this request in that spirit. I would just like to say this is a case of first impression as far as us, our collective recollection. I don't think we've ever, in our experience, had a member of the public utilize the bylaws to make a request. Therefore, the timing of the time allotment for the presentation isn't clearly delineated in the bylaws. The gentlemen that have made the request are asking for 30 minutes for the floor, and I will turn that over to the board to vote as to what amount of time you think is appropriate to give to this request and presentation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir, you're right.
I'd like to give the gentleman that would like to give this presentation at least 45 minutes. I understand.
Okay, hold on, excuse me. This is the board trying to figure this out. So, okay, you've recognized. Is there another comment from the board? Anybody else want to be recognized?
I have one question. Is that a motion?
Turn your mic on. Turn your mic on.
Motion to allow them at least 45 minutes. I don't understand why we would try to limit that.
There was no second on that motion particular point. Maybe there's some question. I don't know.
Yeah, I was getting ready. So I have no problem with giving them the 30 minutes that they're asking for. And if it goes over, it goes over. But I'm not going to give a blanket extra just to...
I'll modify my motion for 30 minutes.
Okay.
I second that.
All right. So it's been moved probably second to allow 30 minutes for the presentation. Any questions on the motion? Any other questions?
I have a question.
Okay, that's a question.
So are there two presenters? How many presenters are there?
They submitted it jointly, so they can split their time, or they can have one representative, you know, represent them as a whole.
So we're voting on a total of 30 minutes.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions?
Make sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? Total of 30 minutes. Any other questions? All right. All in favor of that motion that's on the floor, presenters allowed 30 minutes. Please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. All right. So Ms. Sable, is there anything else? So any board member have any questions about anything before we listen to the presentation?
Not at this time.
Okay. Who do we have then, Ms. Sable?
We have Mr. Jordan Hutchinson and Mr. Christopher Baldwin.
All right. Gentlemen, you have the floor. Just quickly state your name and we'll have 30 minutes to kind of keep us mindful of the time.
Christopher Baldwin.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Just to start off, when we submitted that request last
month. Please, microphone.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry about that. When we submitted that request last month, it was for the board to go over the findings of the Jackson Lewis investigation. So we never actually asked to make a presentation. I don't feel like that's our job as a citizen to tell you guys how to do your job. So we just wanted the transparency of it.
Could you speak a little closer to
yes,
the mic for me, please?
So we just wanted the transparency of it. Like I said, we weren't expecting to actually give you guys a presentation, but we're more than happy to talk about whatever it is you guys want to talk about. So like I said, when Ms. Sable told me yesterday morning that I had 3 minutes to speak, I did question that and didn't know where that came from. So she actually ended up telling me I gave you guys the whole email thread just so you guys can see it yourself. That there's no rule for that. So, and that's, I don't know where that came from or whose decision that was, but that's, I feel like that's why we're all in this room. That's what started all this, is there's no policies. It's hard to enforce something like that just on a whim, especially when what we wanted to discuss was the findings from the investigation that she was involved in. And she's trying to limit that to 3 minutes. To me, that's very, very concerning. It was a taxpayer-funded investigation, so I feel like it's extremely important for the transparency for you guys, for everybody sitting out here behind me. So, again, that's kind of where we stand on that. But that's been our issue and what we were trying to fix since the very start of all this. Even starting back with trying to get you guys our original emails on January 20th and February 4th. We were disciplined for that. There's no rule. It says we couldn't be, or says we couldn't contact you. You know, we're just kind of making it up as we go. And I feel like that's caught up to us. So. Am I allowed to address a question to the board?
Yes, your presentation.
Thank you.
Right here. You can state your comment. You have 30 minutes, so whatever you want to state, yes, sir, please do.
So my initial and overwhelming concern would be that there was a public use of funds to, you know, facilitate this investigation on members that are contract employees of this board. There was a summary that was obviously taken care of from that investigation, and yet it's not agended. And I think that that's pretty concerning, you know, just by itself. Branching into the matters of the actual, you know, complaint findings and everything themselves, I think it's important for the public to understand that it's of my belief that they've controlled every stage of the process here. We've repeatedly requested independent review of allegations involving the highest levels of this administration. And at virtually every critical stage, the people who accused maintained control over what was investigated, who was investigated, where it was investigated, and what happened to the complaint. September 22nd, we filed our first complaint alleging misconduct against the Office of Internal Affairs. That complaint was reviewed by Chief Lee, Assistant Chief Gonzalez, and District Attorney Sable, who are the Office of Internal Affairs. And the next morning, they closed it. No investigation. This board has approved a set of collective bargaining agreement and rules, the governing language of this that employees are expected to follow, except we're not following it, you know, when it comes to investigations. Any complaint of misconduct requires an investigation. There's no, it's a mandatory language, must and all. Jackson Lewis confirmed that there was conflict inside of that initial review. Well, I don't totally agree with them squarely saying that Chief Gonzalez was responsible for the conflict of interest inside of that review. Nevertheless, that's what the report says. And if that is the case, which it is, him being involved in that complaint and involved in the review of that complaint and the closure of that complaint, obviously, you know, biases that level of investigation, to which it is, in my opinion, that we still have not received a fair rule in compliance with the rules and regulations for our September 22nd complaint. Extending beyond that, we filed a grievance on October 6th. When we arrived to the grievance meeting, the same three administrators were there, Lee, Gonzalez, and Sable. Our grievance was denied by those same three people. And in the grievance denial, it actually said the review process did not create or imply favoritism or bias. And this structure eliminated any conflict, actual or perceived. Jackson Lewis later determined that Gonzalez's involvement in the underlying review was improper. So when we challenged the administrator's control of our complaint, the administration then controlled the process used to challenge that control. You're going to see a reoccurring theme here of at every process, the three of them being involved, and this investigative summary, you know, while it touches on some of this stuff, it doesn't dive deep into the actual practical aspects of what occurred and led to this moment. On December 3rd, we filed another complaint. This time, there would be no ambiguity. The complaint named Chief Lee, Assistant Chief Gonzalez, and District Attorney Sable. And all three were respondents. All three participated in reviewing that complaint and closing that complaint again. No independent investigation. Jackson Lewis investigated this, and their finding was substantiated. Their words were, the December 3rd complaint, December 3rd, 2025 complaint, was initially dismissed by the individuals who themselves identified as subjects of the allegation. Jackson Lewis called it an inherent conflict of interest that undermined the objectivity of the decision-making process. That finding changes the entire discussion, because from that point forward, the existence of a conflict is not our allegation. It is an independent investigative finding. On February 4th, we had learned from experience, so we filed another complaint and specifically told the district that we were not comfortable disclosing our factual allegations of the harassment, discrimination, hostile work environment, and retaliation to the administrators that we were accusing. And again, the three same actors here. We requested an independent investigation. We had approximately 25 factual allegations to provide, and eventually we were permitted to disclose them to Jackson Lewis, who was represented as independent. But look carefully at what Jackson Lewis says about its own assignment. Their report states, initially, the firm was engaged to investigate allegations raised in a written complaint dated December 3rd, 2025. Not February 4th, December 3rd. The same complaint that the respondents had already closed against themselves months earlier. Jackson Lewis then states that Its scope was subsequently expanded to include specific allegations from the February complaint. This distinction matters because even after an outside law firm was retained, we did not determine its scope. Jackson Lewis did not determine its scope. The respondents determined its scope. On March 13th, then the process was divided to expand upon that. The approximately 25 factual allegations had been specifically requested be independently investigated were split from the entire independent process and reassigned into the district's administrative process. Stop there. By this point, Jackson Lewis in the rearview mirror would have ultimately determined Gonzalez had improperly participated in evaluating the September complaint. Jackson Lewis would ultimately determine that all three respondents handling the December complaint created an inherent conflict of interest, yet allegations were nevertheless taken from independent processes and returned to administrative structure involving those same officials. And District Attorney Kim Sable participated in that administrative investigation. The same district attorney who was responding in our complaints, the same district attorney who participated in dismissing our December complaint, the same dismissal Jackson Lewis ultimately determined suffered from an inherent conflict of interest. April 9th, Sable then interviewed me as part of their administrative investigation. That interview was recorded. We subsequently requested that recording. We initially received the wrong recording. We continued requesting the correct one. The district withheld it while maintaining that the investigation remained active. Later, when we attempted in good faith to close or withdraw the allegations associated with that process, we were told that the investigation would continue. So again, looking at control, the district determined which allegations left Jackson Lewis. The district determined where those allegations went. The district determined who investigated them. The district determined that the investigation would continue, and the district controlled access to the resulting investigative record. Meanwhile, we were being disciplined. While we were trying to obtain independent review, Hutchinson and I received Loudermill notice concerning communication to this board. Jackson Lewis reviewed those notices. Jackson Lewis reviewed whether those notices constituted retaliation. Their finding was inconclusive. Jackson Lewis specifically stated the undersigned was unable to confirm that through this investigation, the reason the Loudermill notices were issued. They found evidence supporting different explanation as they identified a lack of clarity about the role in any, if any, that the fire board plays when a complaint has been made against a fire chief and fire district attorney. But then there's an important record the board should remember. Back in September, Chief Lee wrote directly to the commissioners. He stated that personnel matters were handled administratively and were not subject to board adjudication unless the matter directly involves one of the three contract employees. In this case, it affected two. Our complaints directly involved Chief Lee. They had directly involved District Attorney Sable. Yet when we sought this board involvement for concerning those officials, we were subjected to a disciplinary process for our communication that correctly predicted the future of the ongoing retaliation concerns. While all of these complaints and investigations remain unresolved, we were terminated, but the investigation process did not end. These allegations that had been removed from the independent review and returned to the district's administrative process were subsequently moved back outside for independent consideration after our termination. That sequence should be examined carefully. We requested independence. The allegations reached independent investigators. They were removed from independent review. They were returned to the administrative process. We were terminated, and afterwards, allegations were returned back to the outside process. I'm not asking for you to accept a conclusion about why. Those are the events. Now put the sequence together. In September, administration reviews the complaint challenging administration. Jackson Lewis finds Gonzalez participated improperly. October, administration participates in the grievance challenging that review. December, the three respondents review and dismiss the complaint naming all three respondents. Jackson Lewis substantiated with an inherent conflict of interest. February, we specifically requested independence. Jackson Lewis is retained, but according to Jackson Lewis's own report, its original assignment concerns the previously closed December complaint, and its expanded assignment encompasses only specific allegations from our February 4th complaint. March, our allegations are split from the independent investigation and returned to the district's administrative process. April, one of the respondents participates in that administrative investigation. The district maintains control of that investigation and its record. Meanwhile, we are subjected to Loudermill proceedings for communication seeking board intervention. Jackson Lewis makes no finding whether those were retaliatory. May, we are terminated. Afterwards, allegations are moved outside for independent review again. Commissioners, I do not need to characterize that sequence. I do not need to call it corruption. I do not need to tell you what conclusion to reach. That chronologically speaks for itself. The fundamental problem was never simply whether one allegation was substantiated and another was not. The problem is that there was never any consistently independent process through which these allegations could travel from beginning to end without control being returned to the people whose conduct was being challenged. And now we know something we did not have to speculate about. Jackson Lewis independently confirmed that the conflicts occurred. One finding involved Gonzalez improper participation. The other one was stronger, with the three respondents participating and dismissing their own complaint. Jackson Lewis called this the inherent conflict of interest. So my question to this board is not complicated. Once an independent investigation confirmed that these conflicts existed, who independently went back and examined the decisions made while those conflicts controlled the process? Who independently reviewed the September complaint? Who independently reconciled the grievance that defended that process? Who independently examined it? What happened to the allegations removed from Jackson Lewis? Who independently reviewed the administrative investigation? And who independently examined the employment actions occurring while all of this was happening? Because finding a conflict is only half the job. You have to address what the conflict process produced. Nearly a year later, after we first raised this issue, this is the part that has still not been answered. We were told that there was no bias. We were told there was no conflict. We were told the structure eliminated even the appearance of conflict. Then an independent law firm investigated and found an improper participation. It found inherent conflict of interest, and it found that the conflict undermined the objectivity of the decision-making process. Those are not our words. Those are Jackson Lewis. So now the question belongs to the board. If the independent investigation established that the process was conflicted, who was going to independently examine that conflicted process did?
Chris is a lot better talker than I am. Same thing. So just to try to dumb this down, I guess, and make it hit a little bit more home. So Ms. Kim or Chief Lee wrote to Ms. Sable on February 7th, said, your role will be a limited function. You will not be involved in any fact finding, investigative determinations, or conclusions. That didn't happen. Jump down to June 17th. He wrote to you and said there was no operational wrongdoing, that this was fully rectified and resolved because he transferred the December 3rd complaint into Jackson Lewis. Those statements are nowhere in that Jackson Lewis summary you guys have in front of you. Not one place. He also says that the expenditures of these public funds was not to suppress the truth, but to independently uncover it. We had 34 allegations that we submitted between the December complaint and the February complaint. You guys only have 16 of them in front of you. There's 8 that are still remaining in the administrative scope. They had to hire a whole separate law firm to investigate those, which they have, now that would be the second time those 8 allegations have been investigated. One of those allegations was reduced to contextual background by Chief Lee and Ms. Sable, and 8 of them have not been reported on. Just so you guys know what those 8 are, I'm going to read them to you real quick. So it's preservation of contract benefits through concealment of misconduct findings, the use of management rights with wrongful intent, manipulation of administrative processes for personal advantage, failure to ensure due process and impartial investigations, suppression of reporting and obstruction from oversight, violation of district rules, regulations, and charter authority, deceptive conduct, including misrepresentation and falsification of records, retaliation, adverse treatment, and hostile work environment. Those were in our December complaint that they dismissed, found a conflict of interest for. I don't know how much more I really need to read of this, but I'll keep going if you guys would like.
That's on page 3 of the packet you gave us?
Yes. So throughout this investigation, Chief Lee stated that he removed 8 allegations from the February complaint from Jackson Lewis. Those 8 were reportedly on Chief Gonzalez. So if you flip towards the end on March 31st, Ms. Sable contacted the Jackson Lewis company, or contacted the county to contact her. That Chief Gonzalez gave them the wrong binder. The These are the words from the Jackson Lewis investigator. I heard back from Chief Gonzalez, who indicated that he had provided us with a binder containing materials related to all allegations set forth in the February 26th complaint. The binder included documents from the currently under internal review. Chief Gonzalez stated that this was not a significant issue, but he wanted these materials returned so he could properly address any internal investigations. Why did he have allegations and materials related to the investigation on him? Why did Ms. Sable try to get these back for him? What? I don't know if she told Chief Lee about it, but if so, then that's a whole another separate issue. Again, I'm not going to take up everybody's time today. I've been here long enough, but I can do this all day long. You guys have all of the evidence. I printed out all of these emails for you. So now you guys can see for yourself that you guys have been manipulated as well. And I say that aggressively because you guys were told not to adjudicate this complaint or to point out any investigative findings. Well, in that paperwork on March 6th, he told the exact same thing to the investigators, his own investigators. It chose his own scope. It chose what allegations were going to be investigated. And he told them any personal disciplinary determinations will be addressed through the district's established administrative processes. Chiefly is the one that establishes the discipline. So not only did he decide what he was going to be investigated on for all three of them, he decided his own discipline. Again, in June, you guys have the emails. He told you that it was fully resolved, and that wasn't the case. So again, this is why I requested it to be on there. Wasn't expecting to do this presentation, so kind of winging it, honestly. So, you guys have anything? I got nothing left to say on this.
You guys can conclude it. We want to allow your full time. We'll talk as a board on what we've heard and go from there. So that's how we're going to handle this. Owner, so
yes, sir.
Any closing remarks? Anything else?
No, sir. We've done this the past year or so.
Okay.
For some questions.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for providing this notebook, the documents, the characterization. You've laid this out and walked us through some of the points that you wanted us to obviously highlight and understand. We're going to close off this part, and that will allow for us to have a conversation on what we've heard. I'm sure some of my board members have questions or kind of bring this along so we can understand. I've heard some things, and so I want to talk with my colleagues. So thank you so much. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, board. So we've heard some things here, and thank you, public, for being here today and your comments. So board, I'll bring it back to us for discussion. Anybody want to start off or have questions? I'll start. So in this letter, this summary letter here, and I kind of been focused on these the last four points here, right? I want to be mindful that we have arbitration going on, right? So whatever that is going on, and we don't want to prejudice that process and shortchange it. So I'm a little guarded in what I'm saying. But what I heard, these points in the back, particularly as I evaluated, it seems as though maybe the request is not getting into the employment situation, because we've had the discussion that we don't deal with employees. Our three contracted employees are the treasurer, the attorney, and the chief. Those are our three constitutional officers that we hire, employ, and we discipline, etc. It sounds that what I heard tonight as well is that maybe some of our policies aren't fully elucidated, and there may be some gaps there and some things that have been raised as far as process and how it was done, how it was carried out. And from a policy standpoint, as a policy maker on this board, that's pausing in question to take a strong look at that. That's one thing that jumped out to me. There were some clear gaps that were further pointed out at the podium that called the question, maybe we should look at as a policy board member here. And then measuring that against the evaluation of the three officers or the two officers in this said case that we employ and averse and their actions regarding those procedures as far as those complaint handling, et cetera. Those are all things I think from a policy standpoint that causes me some pause that make sure that we fully understand that and addressing those concerns, gaps, et cetera. And so that's my initial thought, and I'd love to hear from some of my board members.
I heard a lot about governance, and I wanted to ask Chief or City Attorney. So we have several documents that kind of govern what we do, right? But one was our creating document in the legislature. Second is special taxing district. Then we have our own charter is actually a state legislative document. Is that not right?
Correct. We have Chapter 189, which is the universal blueprint for all special districts. And from 189, you go to Chapter 191. Chapter 191 grants the core legal teeth to this fire board. You levy taxes, non-ad valorem assessments, you charge impact fees, you issue bonds. And you outline the core duties like purchasing equipment, maintaining property, and issuing bonds. Our charter is the localized legislative act passed by the Florida legislature that creates and establishes the St. Lucie County Fire District. Our boundaries, the charter dictates unique board composition, mandates the hiring of the fire chief, the attorney, and the clerk treasurer. The charter must live within the boundaries established under Chapter 189 and 191. The charter defines who we are and what our boundaries are, and the statutes define how we must act. Our bylaws are how we conduct our meetings, how committees are formed, how minutes are taken, the election of our officers on the board. It's the bottom of your legal chain. The bylaws can't grant the board any power not already given by Chapter 191 or the Charter. The bylaws are not laws. They're how we govern meetings. Enforcement power over the public is achieved via resolutions. For example, the board passes resolutions for the Fire Prevention Code. External legal ties built into our bylaws include statutes like Florida Statute 286.011, which requires us to adhere to Sunshine Law notice requirements. Then we have Florida State Statute 286.012, which physically allows a member that cannot abstain from voting unless they have a stated conflict. Then we have Chapter 112, which is all of your ethics and financial disclosure requirements. And then we also rely on Florida State Statute 87101, disturbance of assembly from time to time. So that's kind of the hierarchy of our structure. I did submit a memorandum to the Fire Board on the 20th of December that kind of details the roles and responsibilities or the delineation of responsibilities between the Fire Board and the Fire Chief.
So much for governance. And so really maybe what we're talking about here, what was requested of us was a review of our processes, perhaps, as opposed to governance. And I also have a question. What governs the investigative structure?
So currently, the governance powers of the board for a special independent district is policy making and administration. The board acts as the governing body, setting policies, adopting rules, and overseeing the administration of the district. You're responsible for ensuring the district fulfills its statutory purpose, providing fire control, rescue, and emergency medical services within our boundaries. You have financial powers and power over financial policy for budgeting, taxation, and assessments, and the issuance of bonds. For personnel and employment, the board hires, supervises, and may remove the fire chief, the district attorney, or the clerk treasurer. The board sets employment policies, compensation, and benefits, including participation in retirement systems such as the Florida retirement system, or we have our own retirement system. We're not a part of FRS or local firefighter pension plans. You also have a power over our procurement and contracting policies. The board has authority to enter into contracts for goods and services and construction and following state procurement laws and competitive bidding requirements. The board may participate in state term contracting and piggyback contracting and cooperative purchasing agreements. For planning and facilities, this board oversees the planning, construction, and maintenance of fire stations and other public facilities. The board must ensure that the facilities and services are consistent with local government comprehensive plans. Legal and regulatory compliance. This board must comply with open government law, sunshine law, public records, ethics laws, and financial reporting requirements. The board is responsible for ensuring the district meets all statutory and charter-based obligations, including performance reviews and public accountability. Other powers as specified in the charter, the district's charter may grant additional powers, such as the authority to adopt rules, enforce liens, foreclose on properties for unpaid assessments, and amend the charter subject to the statutory procedures for charter amendment. Examples of implementation would be, for example, adoption of the budget, which we're currently going through the same process now. Personnel decisions. The board evaluates the fire chief's performance annually and sets salary ranges for firefighters and administrative staff. If a new fire station is needed, the board may propose a bond referendum to voters outlining the project and repayment plan. For procurement, the board approves contracts for new fire trucks, ensuring compliance with competitive bidding laws. So those are the general powers of the board. It's important to note that the board has high-level governance power, but the day-to-day operational power is vested in the fire chief. And the board has delegated that power. If you look at Section 3B of our current bylaws, it says, provided, however, that the exercise of any and all executive, administrative, and ministerial powers may be delegated by the fire board to any of its officers, employees, or agents. And the board has delegated some of those responsibilities in the employment agreement and or job description of your clerk treasurer, your fire chief, and your district attorney. By hiring a fire chief under Section 12 of the charter, the board legally transferred those day-to-day administrative powers, such as firing and discipline, to the chief. A single board member cannot unilaterally call that power back to manage an individual personnel dispute. Chapter 91 also strictly protects union grievance structure. And as you know, we're in the middle of a grievance arbitration currently. Nothing in Chapter 191 can be used to impair or modify collective bargaining agreements. So the hierarchy of authority in a nutshell for you is you have the statewide government laws in Chapter 189. Then you have your industry or firefighter-specific laws detailed in Chapter 191. You have your local constitution per se, which is our charter. And then you have your internal procedural guides, which is our board bylaws that are adopted by the board.
And one more question?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Grievance procedures are you dictated by union
collective bargaining.
Okay.
And that is negotiated and ratified.
Okay. That's all for now.
All right. Anybody else? Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
So I got a, that's kind of loud. I have a couple just things that I've picked up from listening to this. I mean, I think that we have a governance issue with the fire district. I don't know how. It really hasn't made itself apparent in the past, but it's become very obvious to me that when one of the charter officers is accused of something, they should not be able to police themselves. That's the most basic portion of it. You know, and that goes with the lines of a governance issue. The fire board attorney works for the fire board, yet in my experience, the fire board attorney is far too close with the fire chief in that they are protecting themselves and gatekeeping information in a way that manipulates the will of the fire board. These are my observations of oversight as a fire commissioner. Another thing is you can't expect that we're reading all the emails that are sent to us. I understand that that is a, you know, kind of shocking for some people. This is a board that I commit a lot of time to. However, I get a lot of emails, and I see these people a lot, and sometimes things are said in emails that could have very easily been said in person. So I would definitely advise the administration that just because they send a 40-page email doesn't mean that I read the whole thing. In addition to that, I do believe we have a retaliation issue here at the fire district. I've had a number of people come to me privately and say that they are afraid to come forwards because they rely on their pension, they rely on this, that, and the other. Fire administration has forced people to sign non-disclosure agreements, which I find completely unacceptable. Why on earth is the fire district having employees sign a non-disclosure agreement? We are public. We're a public agency. Everything is subject to public record. I also think that there's an issue in governance where information is too compartmentalized. We are not the NSA. You shouldn't have to have the fire chief go retrieve records. Okay, whenever someone does a records request against me at the county, which happens every single day, IT or HR goes in and gets it, and I hardly even know about it. Sometimes I don't know about it. In this fire district, it seems like if somebody requests something specific to the fire chief, he has to go get it himself, and then he charges his salary to them to go get it. I feel like that is something that's just definitely needs to be changed and addressed. In addition to that, and the attorney can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the fire chief, the fire attorney serve, and the clerk treasurer serve at the pleasure of the board. Is that the right terminology?
We are at will employment, but we have a contract agreement.
Right.
We have to adhere to the employment agreement, the term. There are severance provisions in the contract, but that's the difference between an at-will employee and having an employment agreement.
Who has the ability to determine if you've violated your contract?
The violation of the contract would be the misconduct standard. You could send this, the Jackson Lewis report out for an independent opinion.
And what's the standard of scrutiny for a behavioral violation of a contract? Is that just preponderance of the evidence?
No, the employment agreement specifically quote the misconduct statute, which is very specific for what constitutes misconduct that would warrant you terminating the contract for misconduct. So that I don't think you have. You think you have it? I would say that I reached out to Lori Manns. I communicated with every member of this board to reach out and have a conversation with Lori Manns. She's the attorney who did the investigation. She's the attorney who authored this report. She told me to my face, I did nothing wrong. If any member of this board feels otherwise,
I think that that's
ladies and
enough.
Gentlemen, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Ma'am, I'm still talking, so that's good for now. I just want to say that our unions brought forward to us that they have three of our people that work at the district, including two of our officers that we hire ourselves, currently under consideration for a vote of no confidence. I think it's definitely on this board's best interest that we just go ahead and add that to our next month's meeting. I believe their next fire union meeting is prior to our next board meeting. I think we need to have that as a full agenda item. I want to hear out what happened with that, if they did follow forward with that, and then we proceed to a vote immediately after we hear from them. I think that that is just very important at this point. I think that this is a very awkward situation. I don't know why on earth we would ever allow a fire chief, fire attorney to have access to public records, confidential information when they're under investigation themselves. Okay, that Jackson Lewis thing was researching the actions of administration, which administration was in charge of the scope of that investigation. So again, they were policing themselves. They've said a couple times, we don't have the ability to do anything. I don't see how that's possible. Okay, we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that people are not wasting money. And what I mean by that is, again, this is my take of the events that have unfolded here. Three employees were fired, right? The firing was defended with an investigation that cost how much money?
Excuse Excuse me, this is about the Jackson Lewis report.
Ma'am, I'm...
Okay, let's have order. Hold on.
Please be quiet.
Hold on. We're going to remain civil, okay? And we're under the Jackson Lewis discussion. So, Commissioner, your question in scope is a question about the Jackson Lewis investigation. How much was it? Is that your question, sir?
Yes.
Okay. So do we have an answer to that? Okay. All right. Okay.
Have we budgeted an amount for it?
Well, for the record, it's on the record. We have to figure that out, sir. So that's part of your discovery.
It seems to be that we've spent some sort of money on it. Okay. So the point being, we've spent public money on an investigation to defend firings. And then I believe recently I got an email saying that the chief has offered these same employees jobs back. Okay. In my mind, that's not good administration. Okay. if you have fired somebody, then hired an attorney firm to double down on why you fired them and then offer them their jobs back, that seems like somebody wasted money in there. Okay. That's a governance issue. There's not oversight being expressed there, in my opinion. I don't know how we rectify that, but that is us needing to step in and provide oversight to the chief, in my mind. Because if we're going to do that, then, you know, we should have never done the investigation and you should have just dealt with the union and got them back. And if before I get someone criticizing me, I'm not trying to tiptoe around this. I'm trying to be direct and talk about what we're talking about here. I'm not trying to interfere with anybody's, you know, administrative, whatever, you know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert. I'm just trying to do the best I can. I'm a seventh grade civics teacher that got elected to office, and I'm trying to learn as fast as I can here, but there's a lot of information. But to me, it seems like something's terribly wrong here. So governance issue, retaliation that I've heard multiple times. I believe I'm experiencing retaliation myself at the moment. And you know, I think that we need to respect the union's call, whatever they end up doing for our next meeting. And this is all in relation to a governance issue that's been brought up here today.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Anybody else, good commissioner, would like to be recognized for comments? Any other commissioner? Yes.
Mr. Chair,
yes. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. I would echo with respect to Commissioner Fosby. Sitting in the private sector looking at an issue of the captain driving the ship, and we have a vote of no confidence is coming up. I absolutely want that on the agenda. I also want to make sure that we understand we seriously need to look at how we govern our own selves and look into allegations of retribution. I think in the public sector and the private sector, that is a challenge. If people are not willing to talk because they are fearful, that is not the organization that I want to be part of. Now, I've been very blessed to be on this board for 6 years. I want to make sure we all know that everyone should be able to have a seat at the table and be able to talk. So I appreciate that, and I look forward to see what happens at the next meeting.
Okay. Any other commissioner want to make a comment on what they've heard or they have thoughts? So I want to get some clarity around a few things and make sure I hear this right. So our next fire board meeting is coming up in August, right?
September.
And so we anticipate, or it's been brought to our attention by the union that there may be some action coming forth. Their meeting is prior to our fire board meeting. Okay. Well, Commissioner Clasby, you brought this up, so I'm trying to get some clarity around what you were saying and what you meant here. So are you saying we should agenda the conversation and action that may come forth, or we anticipate during that meeting that the fire union will come forth with something and that we have a full discussion as a result of that? I'm trying to understand what do you want on an agenda so that we can have a informed conversation here.
Sure, Mr. Chair. So I'm just going off what I've heard here today.
And right. I think we all are. So
Mr. Sapp's in the audience. Maybe he could correct me, but it's my understanding that they have a union meeting monthly.
Yes, sir. That's correct. We have a.
We're going to allow for our union to get some clarity because I think we need it because we can't be flying in the dark here.
Yes, sir. Our next meeting is going to be on, it looks like September 9th, the second Wednesday of the month.
Okay.
So if my numbers are correct, you are the third Wednesday, which would put you at September 16th, I believe.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. So does that give some clarity, sir, back to you on what you asked?
So my point, just to clarify again, since now we have the dates, since they're, I believe they did something that's going to have a vote of confidence for three people, two of which are our direct subordinates. I believe it's imperative to us to have at that next meeting, because if they, let's just say they do move forward with that, we need to act on that, I believe, because, and I think that we ought to suspend these two folks in the interim, so that way there's no public trust issues, preservation of information, these sorts of things. Whenever a police officer does something and they're under investigation of some sort, they are suspended with pay until the action is resolved. I mean, I would ask the county attorney's office to provide us with an attorney in the interim until this is all resolved. That would be my preference. But I would definitely like to have a full agenda report of what the union decides as far as their vote of confidence with these three people. I think it's very important that we start paying more attention to these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. We should definitely have all already known when fire union meetings are, I think. And, you know, make sure that we're just paying attention to more than just what administration's telling us, I believe.
Okay. Board?
Mr. Chair, think it's really important that we be fair here and understand that we've heard a lot today, a lot that was said in passion, some of it said in anger, some of it, there's a lot that's been said today, and there's always two sides to every story, and I think we ought to make sure that we're not rushing into something that is not a fair process. I just want to make sure that we're fair, not only to the audience and to the families that are involved.
Well, let's off order, please.
I want to make sure that we're fair, and I have been reading the emails. I mean, they've been voluminous. Yeah. They have been. And I just want to make sure that I don't see, first of all, suspending somebody on the basis of today is called for. I think if you want to discuss the contracts and the continued employment of the charter officers, that is absolutely your right to ask, request. Yeah. And so I just want to make sure that we're as fair to administration as we want to be fair to the people that are affected by the actions of this administration.
All right. So anybody, board members here? I think, hold on, audience. Let me make sure you understand the context of fair from my perspective. I was given this binder when I walked in, and some of the stuff was talked about today. And there's a context that's been shared today that obviously has landed a little bit different. And it's called a question about some of the policies that we actually oversee and some of the things that we probably need to go back and revisit. I think there's a fair context that, you know, none of us have read all of these emails, but some of this is going to warrant some attention that we got to go back and check some things. I know I do, and I'm sure you do as well. We have two missing commissioners that aren't in chamber today. And so that is something that we know from a process, and as duly elected people that were elected by the citizens, it's fair that they be here to be a part of the process as well. So,
Mr. Chair, all due respect, I've been on this meeting for 2 hours and 21 minutes. I've heard every word everyone said.
You have, sir.
All due respect, I am 5,000 miles away. At the time of a previous engagement that I had spent 2 years ago, and I appreciate the board allowing me to be here. Mm-hmm. Make sure the board knows I take my job very serious.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. We all do. And that's what I'm trying to say here is that this has pricked the consciousness of us all. You know, and I think that obviously looking at this and looking at the allegations and the testimony from the two firefighters that have come before us are very serious, and no one's not going to obfuscate their duty. So I think that we know that the next fire board meeting, we'd look to have a full agenda and conversation about this. There may be a subsequent meeting that needs to happen before this. in my opinion.
I'd like to make a motion to suspend the fire chief and the fire attorney pending that discussion.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor that's been made by Commissioner Clasby and seconded by Commissioner Leonard to suspend the fire chief and the fire attorney. Any questions on that motion? Yeah, question, sure, comment? Yes, ma'am.
Make some comments. I know there's a motion on the floor, but you know me, I'm always slow to talk. I'm more of a listener. I like to take it in. I like to hear what everyone has to say. I don't think that I'm the most important person in the room, and I know I'm certainly not the most smartest person in the room.
Is your mic?
Put your microphone a little closer. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Sorry. So yes, this has been going on for quite some time. We've all received emails. I'm sure we all know people that work here at the fire district. I've received numerous documents in the mail from previous fire chiefs, spouses, calls from different people throughout the fire district. So this has become an incredibly emotional topic and situation, as we know. And it's not appropriate to try personal individual cases from this dais. I'm not here to pick a side and say one is right, one is wrong. I'm here to protect the credibility of this fire district and the taxpayers that we serve. This district is a taxpayer-funded agency, and that means we are held to a higher standard. Because when you put on that uniform and carry the title of firefighter, officer, chief, or commissioner, you are representing something larger than yourself. You are representing, again, this district and this community. And the public has every right to expect professionalism, good judgment, and accountability from all of us. I will say, I think of all the commissioners up here, given my 20 years in the towing industry, working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, literally always on call. While you guys obviously have it much worse, I too know what it is like to deal with people when they are having their worst moments. I was 20 years old when I took my first call for a young lady who died on 95, Christmas Eve night, coming home from college, following behind her father. She lost control of her SUV, wasn't wearing a seatbelt. She ejected and it landed on her. Father looked back in the rearview mirror, noticed that she was gone, turned around, and at that time noticed all of the lights and fire trucks on the side of 95 pulled over. Sure enough, it was his daughter. Daughter had a dog with her in the vehicle. Law enforcement almost shot the dog because the dog would not let them get anywhere near her. I can tell you story after story. I've seen a Cavalier get T-boned by a Suburban, and I've seen an 80-year-old's teeth. I've seen numerous things. So what I want to say to everyone in the fire district is I understand, even though it is on a much smaller scale, but I understand the stress and the mental rigors that this job requires of you guys. And I am used to shenanigans. I've seen those videos, and you know, they personally do not shock or offend me. I've seen worse. I get the need to blow off steam, but whatever terminology we want to use, horse playing, hazing, light hazing, joking, shocking people with a modified bug zapper, it's not acceptable, guys, and it's not professional. We wouldn't expect to walk into PNC Bank and see people zapping each other. And even though you all have an incredibly tough job, that doesn't make it okay to do that. There are certain lines that a professional public safety organization simply shouldn't cross, especially when it's funded by taxpayer dollars. At the same time, I have serious concerns about how we got here, how issues have been handled, and how employees communicate with leadership, and how discipline is administered. So yes, I would support a forward-looking review of our processes.
But I also don't believe the problems we are seeing begin and end with three fired firefighters. From everything I've seen, read, conversations I've had with the community, I believe this organization truly does have a systemic culture problem. And culture problems are not created by one person, and they're not created overnight. So to be clear, I expect clear standards of conduct. I expect consistent discipline. I expect supervisors to understand their responsibilities. I expect communication between administration and the rank and file to improve. I expect employees to have a legitimate and safe way to report concerns without fear of retaliation. I expect a serious effort to rebuild trust between administration and the men and women in our stations. And I expect this culture of division, mistrust, and dysfunction to change. We have to remember that this fire district belongs to the taxpayers, and they expect competence, they expect professionalism, they expect leadership, and they expect all of us to remember that we represent something larger than ourselves. That is the standard I'm going to hold Chief Lee to, this board to, and the same standard I'm going to hold everyone else to. Again, from what I've seen, it's almost the easy way out to let a fire chief go. And that seems to be sort of the history. And so I almost want to challenge this organization. I know, I hear you. No, I do. Things absolutely need to change. And I can tell you one thing, going forward from here, this district is not going to be the same going forward. There will be changes, that is certain. Whatever those changes are, but there is going to be... Do you know how respected firefighters are in our community? When you guys show up, everyone loves firefighters. They don't love the officers, right? Because they might get a ticket, they might be going to jail, and they sure as heck don't love the tow company and coming to pay that tow bill when they have to come pick up their vehicle. But you guys hold such a high honor in our community. And we have to restore the trust back to this district, back to the men and women that work here. And that's what I am bound and determined to ensure that we do going forward.
That conclude your remarks, Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
Any other commissioner? We have a motion on the floor. Just remind us. Any other?
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a motion in a second.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate your kind words. And always remember this, everyone follows the leader.
Okay. So any other comments, questions? What about the motion on the floor?
Yeah. Just quick comment. I agree with what Commissioner Fowler said, and that's exactly why I believe in the interest of transparency and governance, we ought to suspend these two individuals who have been accused of retaliation and conspiring to manipulate the board.
Okay.
Can you call the roll?
No, sir. I have a question.
Yes.
So there's a motion on the floor. A second, and I get that.
Yes, sir.
And you've alluded to suspension of this. My concern, question is, what succession? Who's
that would be a subsequent motion, I believe.
Okay. Subsequent motions. All right. Any other questions then? All right, clerk, would you call a roll, please? Roll call vote.
Commissioner Fowler?
No, ma'am.
Commissioner Hudson?
No, ma'am.
Commissioner Martin? Commissioner Leonard?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Clasby?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Morgan?
No, ma'am.
Commissioner Johnson?
No, ma'am. Okay. What do you have next, commissioners?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
In light of that, I do believe that this is something that we need to be discussing at next month's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I would like a detailed report from the fire union as to what happened with their vote of confidence,
okay.
How it came up, and... the board could deliberate at that time what we would like to do.
I think that's widely echoed and accepted, sir. I have no problems with that. Please note that for the record. Okay. All right. Anything else from fire board at this point?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you to the board for allowing me to phone in and call in. It's
yes, sir.
Very much appreciated, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, no. Thank you for being here.
Yes. The next meeting is the one we just moved to 4 p.m. And so...
Oh, yeah. We may need to... I anticipate a longer meeting, so we maybe need to go back to our regularly scheduled time, and if we have to take a little break in between that, I would don't want to rush it. I want to have that. I'm sure we're going to have public comment as well. What's the pleasure of the board? Thank you for bringing that to our attention. We can always reverse what we just did.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I mean, as far as I know, I think we already all have it blocked off on our calendar because it was scheduled for that. I'm fine with it starting at 3 as well. Great.
Okay. I'd rather have a motion because we already motioned to change it. So to
make a motion to start the meeting at 3 p.m. for September
16th.
Yeah.
Second.
All right. Moved and properly seconded. We're going to move our meeting time back to 3 p.m. on September 16th with the agenda item from the fire board, hearing from the actual fire union. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Motion passes. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I would request that no one, to my knowledge, has actually spoken with Lori Gaines, and I sent out that information to all the commissioners. I mean, Lori Mans, she is the chief investigator and author of the Jackson Lewis Report. It is imperative that she be here to address any misunderstandings or misinterpretations of her report so that she can answer your questions exactly to what her report found. What her report did not find. If you look at the bylaws, the people accused in the agenda item have the equal right to have that side of it heard. So my request to you, and I've been trying to get her here, maybe the county can help facilitate that, to have Lori Mans at that board meeting to answer any questions that the board may have or intends to rely upon to take action against either the district attorney or the fire chief.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm not aware that the union's considerations have anything to do with that, so I don't know that it's necessary.
Any other fire commissioner feel a certain way about things here? Go ahead, Madam, Commissioner.
I would encourage and to have a representative here in attendance. It would have been nice today, but I understand there was a previous... appointment that she could not make it. So,
any other comment from commissioners? Any comments, Phil?
Yeah,
yes.
Since this is seems to be all wrapped up in the Jackson Lewis, that if she can't be available in person, because she could be maybe available remotely. Yeah,
right. I think the availability, in case there are questions. No one's saying that it'll be full agenda, but if there are questions that come as a result. Obviously, the union is going to bring whatever their actions were in anticipation of that. There may be some other pending questions. I think just to have her available, if she's here, it's great. If not, telephonically. But to be able to address, I see no harm in that. So I respectfully, I think, board, we should avail ourselves to understanding all of the information. We obviously are going to be busy between now and then going back through all of this information, looking at these timelines, and also comparing it to our current policies, right? Because one of the points that I respect you brought up, Commissioner Clasby, was governance in our current documents. So we got to fix that. It may not be this meeting, but if there's some glaring omissions and things we missed, I think we at some point got to bring that to our attention. And that's going to weigh heavily on how I interpret information that's coming to me from the union and any other discussion we're having. Because I'm going to be weighing those two pieces of evidence against what actually transpired and what I'm putting together in the timeline. So thank you for that. So please let her know, okay? We want to hear physically if she can be here. Okay. All right. Comments from the fire chief?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to thank every speaker for speaking and giving us your input. It truly does make a difference. Lightning to an extent. For anybody to assume or to make assumptions that I don't care about the people of this fire district, they're wrong. My whole career I spent in the defense, the help, the aid of every firefighter in this district, retired, current, and future. I would actually argue that we're here today because of that. We have over 600 employees in this fire district. I love every single one of them. I'm here for every single one. Again, I would argue that's why we're here today. I want to address something that the union leadership talked about. I'm not going to get into the arbitration process. It's not something that it's proper to talk here. Everything has a proper form. This is not the proper form to discuss that issue. There's a process. We've been working with the union since July 22nd to try to solve this. The agreement that I don't remember how President Sapp described it. It actually, pieces of that agreement actually come from a document that was provided to me by Mr. King. You know, it's part four of your document, sir, section 11, has all of those same requirements in it. It's not unusual. It's to protect the taxpayers in the fire district itself. I have truly, genuinely been trying to get these gentlemen back to work since July 22nd. I've stretched boundaries to try to make it happen. I cannot hire them back today. For those of you who don't realize, I can't. I have to agree with that man over there, and we have to come to an agreement to bring them back to work. I don't have that power. This board doesn't have that power. It's going to take bargaining between me and the union president to do that. And if we can't, then if there's a process for that. To insinuate that I held the MOU, the mental health day, above your head a week after we TA'd it, it's disingenuous. It really is. I mean, we just agreed to that again a second time. I brought it to the union outside of a contract. It's unheard of. And for you to insinuate that I held it over your head is insulting. We have two separate issues here. One is a labor dispute, which is not in front of this board. The other one is the Jackson Lewis investigation. Mr. Clasby claims that Jackson Lewis investigation was somehow tied to this labor dispute. No, it's not. It's completely separate. The Jackson Lewis investigation was initiated long before this labor dispute. So there's two separate topics, sir. And that is for the board's purview, and that is for the board's to do as they wish. And I will respect whatever those wishes are from them. We have hired no less than three, actually four, outside agencies at this point in time to investigate claims by these gentlemen. I'm not going to get into those. Every board member should be aware of them. I've sent numerous emails. Mr. Clasby, sir, if you're not reading your emails that I send you, I apologize. I had no idea. It's not worth your time. But the reality is, if I'm sending you an email, it's probably pretty important, because I don't send baseless emails. If I'm sending you an email, it's pretty important. I've kept this board, every member of this board, entirely aware of every situation, every email, everything that has occurred through this process. I agree with Mr. King, and I agree with the firefighters that are questioning. We don't have a process. This board does not have a process for somebody to come in and complain about me, Kim, or Tim. That's a problem. It's clearly a problem. It's one of the reasons we're here today. I can't fix that problem. The board has to fix that problem.
Right.
I did the best I could, and that's I, on my own, went to the county and had myself investigated, right? So if, for those who want to question my integrity, by all means, do it. I can look in the mirror every single day, because very few people can have themselves investigated, okay? So the county was very instrumental. I appreciate it. I saw some members of the county earlier, but in helping us facilitate that, I think it would be wrong for any board member to opine or question this report without talking to the actual investigator. I think she's made herself available September 1st or something. I'm not sure.
I don't believe my microphone's picking up for the record. I have consistently, repetitively tried to get Ms. Manns to either appear or make herself available. She has scheduling conflicts and other commitments. She asked that you reach out to her via Catherine Darviera, who is the attorney for the county. I believe the last email I received from Ms. Barbieri, she said that Ms. Manns could be available on September 1st. First, she could set aside that day for individual phone calls. If after each member of the board speaks with her telephonically, you still have concerns that anything in her report rises to the level of misconduct, then we need to have her here for the meeting. So I think your first step would be to schedule the phone call with her, go through the report with her, get all your questions answered, ask her what you, explain what you think constitutes misconduct, and let her explain to you the statutory standard. And then you at least could make an informed decision based on the investigation that was conducted by an outside agency that was hired by the county.
Mr. Chair, I don't have anything further.
Okay, thank you. Clerk Treasurer?
No, sir, nothing to add.
You spoke earlier. You spoke a lot, so thank you, sir. All right, you may make an interesting. Attorney Sable, comments? Okay. All right, comments from the board. I think we've kind of said quite a bit today. Thank you all for being. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard, for being a part of this.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I just want to close with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The board can come to its own conclusions without outside counsel. I mean, we're a governing body, and we have authority in our own right without outside counsel. If we believe something happened that's even outside of that report, like say one-on-one in an office or here at this board meeting where we feel like something has been wronged, we have that ability to act on our own, I believe. So,
okay.
In addition to that, I just wanted to say thank you to all the folks who have been interacting with a lot of firefighters lately at the stations and getting to see all the things. I mean, those that drive in the rescues, I mean, that is quite the job. I mean, it's constantly going. I had no idea how busy that truly was until I started kind of hanging out at the stations a little bit and seeing them work. That is a tough job. You're just nonstop moving and doing things. And, you know, it's definitely opened my mind to some of the things that have been being discussed as far as whether it be a three-man rescue or rescue lieutenant, these sorts of things. They make a lot more sense once you're actually out there and seeing it. I mean, you see it on TV, Chicago Fire or something, but you don't really understand what our guys are doing until you go and see our own stations. I mean, there's some incredibly busy stations out there, and I appreciate each and every one of them. So, yeah. Okay.
All right. Any other commissioner coming down the line? Comment?
I just have to. It's where, because I have ridden with, I've got four more stations to go. James has followed and wanted to ride with all the stations. So I've ridden with 16, and I've had one call, and that was the gas leak, and that has been it, which that's a blessing for me, and they've invited me to come back any time, so they may not want you back. But anyway, a shout-out also. I did want to give a shout-out to Station 13 and 17. Great cooks, by the way. Great cooks. We had fresh fish, thanks to Jeff Curl. Thanks.
We took leftovers out of a different fridge.
Ooh.
All right, Commissioner Fowler.
So I will just share. Somehow I got nominated to participate in the Chamber's Spelling Bee and guest judge and raising money, and I chose our Little Feet organization, and we tied. Myself and Paul Bobo tied, so Little Feet will be getting $2,146 extra this year.
Good job.
So just wanted to share that. I felt like it's always overlooked, and it's really just so important. And given it's the beginning of a new school year, the more feet that we can put shoes on, the better.
Well, thank you for, I think, spelling stuff correctly, that you got it up to $2,000. That's good. Probably wouldn't have gotten past $2 myself. Madam Mayor, you good? All right, so I want to thank the board today. It's been a very long day. We had a meeting earlier. I want to thank the public for coming and sharing comments today. And thank you to staff. And thank you to all of the women and men that serve on the line, our community serving U.S. All right, we need to determine absences. Do we have any for absences for the last meeting? Was it Travis? Commissioner Leonard?
I did miss a lot.
Okay, we'll take an excuse, a motion for that.
So move.
So move, proper second for the excuse apps for Commissioner Leonard. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 All right, motion passes. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Thank you, guys. Thank you for being here. Thank you. All right. All right. Motion for adjourn. All right. We are adjourned.
We have a 6 p.m.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Thank you. Well done.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you. Enjoy the West Coast.
Yeah. They're going to start without us.